This is the MLW Radio Network.
Welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. We're back a couple of days after our last show about pro wrestling Noah's return to Budokan that we did with Mark Pickering. This time, it's just Dylan and me. Dylan, how are you feeling today?
Strigger, I'm so happy to be here. And, you know, the original plan was just going to be one single show, and we ended up with two somehow. It's like, this is like a special edition, like a secret episode or something that we're about to do here. It's very beautiful where I'm at right now. The sun's out shining. I think it might be kind of cold, to be honest with you, though. But for me, I'm a man who doesn't worry about the cold. You know, as a human being, okay, it actually is really cold. It's below freezing. I think it would be like minus one Celsius for you, minus one or two. So yes, actually it is very cold right now. But besides that, I feel great. This is a secret. I was actually wearing some of my old gear that I have, like my wrestling gear, which is like MMA shorts, pretty much, when I recorded with Mark. And now I have my other pair on today. So I don't know if this is becoming a new tradition where I just throw on. Because now I sometimes just use my old gear as like pajamas or something. Because they're very comfy, my shorts that I have. Sometimes I just wear them to bed. And I woke up today. It's early in the morning. As always. Not the middle of the night. Which sometimes it is when we record. But I'm really ready to go here. I've got Super Bowl fever right now. The football season is coming to a close. I'm ready to look forward to a draft because my team is nowhere near any kind of championship game. But I'm very excited about doing the show today. We got some cool stuff to talk about, too. So lots of big stuff to happen in the world of pro res and maybe some big stuff for us to talk about as well.
See, now you disclosed that we are actually recording this on Sunday, one day after we did our show. But that's fine. That's totally fine, Dylan.
I won't lie to the listeners like you.
I'm not lying. I'm just not telling when we record.
Okay, well, it doesn't matter when. It's not about when. It's about when it's released, you know. The thing is, if we had actually recorded it, I would be able to make some kind of comment. If a certain team wins, because my team is not in the Super Bowl, but a team I really dislike, my rival team, my number one rival team, and probably the most hated player of any team, Tom Brady, is in the Super Bowl.
We should have done two episodes. One with Brady's team winning and one with the other team winning.
Nah,
cut it to the end and it fits like a glove.
See, this is Memphis style.
Yes! Okay.
You're bringing back on the air. See, you've got a devious mind, Stringer. Where did you learn these tricks besides watching wrestling for all these years, obviously?
I learned it from watching wrestling all these years.
See, that's the thing. Wrestling is educational.
It's corrupting our mind, too.
It's corrupting your mind, but some say corruption, some say cleverness. Right. So you have to have a glass half full point of view. But yes, I would be much more. It's probably a lot safer that we're doing it now, because if Brady wins, I'm probably not going to be happy. So hopefully everything's good, but all the other stuff I said was true about the pro wrestling part, Stringer. This isn't a football show.
No.
Maybe I'll do something for Patreon or something, just talk about it, because we are going to, me and that goofball, my grandpa Ken, are going to watch the game, the Super Bowl, this year. We both want the Chiefs to win. He's a lifelong Chicago Bears fan, because he's from Chicago. But somehow he's jumped ship to the Chiefs, thanks to Patrick Mahomes, the quarterback of the Chiefs. And he's a great player. Like, Kansas City has a great fandom. They're not even that far away from us. Missouri is basically right next door to where I live, you know, in Tennessee. So we're really close by anyway. Isn't that weird, by the way? This is totally different. There's nothing to do with football. But I just thought of something, and I like your opinion on it as a teacher. Have you ever taught geography before in your school?
Yes.
Okay. Why is it that Kansas City is in Missouri and not Kansas?
I have recently come across that too, because Trump once made that mistake.
No, yeah, that happened last year at the Super Bowl. That's right.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He called the Chiefs and congratulated them for the great victory for the great state of Kansas, right?
Yes.
Yes. See, that's my football knowledge. I don't know. I don't know why that is.
You'd think it should be. You know, I really think that was some kind of geographical mistake. They should call it Missouri City. No, but I guess that doesn't roll up. That would not fly with any of their sports teams, to be fair. But, you know, Kansas City, to be fair, has a great sports lineage in the past, and they're a great team. Mahomes is an amazing player. But mainly, I just don't want to see Tom Brady get another championship, and I especially don't want to see the Tampa Bay get a championship, because I'm going to be very unhappy if that happens. But that said, football is a crazy game. And my team is already looking forward to the draft. So in reality, it doesn't really matter that much to me who wins. I'm already thinking about who's going to get drafted on my team, if there's going to be a trade. We just try to trade our draft pick. Now, this is something that you wouldn't understand in the football world. There is no, like, draft or anything, is there? Like, so, there's not.
No. It works differently. Yeah. It just depends on how much money you have and how much money you can spend. Or sometimes how much money you can pretend to have.
I would
That's
love
how
to
it know works
about that, but yes, but like if there was a Trevor Lawrence, the man who will probably appear on a show we might be talking about on the show because the owner may own the football team, if there was a Trevor Lawrence of football and they came by, it would just be like you said, whoever offered him the best contract would get him. It wouldn't be like the yeah. worst team would get the number one pick, like
no.
fool him or whatever.
Because if the worst awesome. Team got the pick, then my team would draft Trevor Lawrence right now.
And you could use him. I think you could use him anyway. If he jumped over to soccer, I think, you know, Schalke could use an athlete of his caliber.
And to your point, Dylan, of Ken abandoning his team.
That is
something that you don't do.
Yes, exactly. I mean, he didn't completely abandon the Bears, and they actually made the playoffs this year, believe it or not. They had a game on Nickelodeon.
Yes, I read about it.
Yes, they were not a bad team this year. They kind of made a mistake. They benched the starting quarterback, and Ken got really mad about that because he must be the biggest Trubisky fan. That's the name of their quarterback. I call him Trubiscuit, but he's like the biggest fan of his that has ever lived, I think. And he was so mad when they benched him. He hated the guy they brought in, the backup that they brought in. He just hated that guy so much. And now there's rumors that they're going to trade for another quarterback. So he's already really unhappy about that. So he's kind of in a sour mood about the Bears right now. But yes, right now he's all in on the Chiefs. Me, I'm not that crazy about it. My only rooting interest is against Tampa Bay. If the Green Bay Packers had won, well, I don't like them either. So I would have rooted against them no matter what. Maybe if a team I was very ambivalent towards, like if the Rams had made it, like the LA Rams, if they had made the Super Bowl, I wouldn't really have a rooting interest in this game, but I wouldn't care that much. But thanks to there being a true heel of football, I now have an interest in this game. So that shows you that in football, just like in wrestling, heels are important. Bad guys are important.
I know, but my point stands, you don't abandon your team. You don't.
I agree. My team is
going to be relegated to the second division, but that won't change that I will root for them again when things are over and the season is over, they can start over again, and maybe they'll get my attention back, but this is just hopeless, but I'm still not abandoning them. But the thing is, Dylan, right now we're in a hard lockdown in Germany, there are a lot of rules that you have to obey. And at the same time, there is a Champions League game next week between Leipzig and Liverpool. And because of the German rules right now, the Corona rules, Liverpool can't come to Germany. They are not allowed to come to Germany from England because England, the UK is on the list of states you can't travel to Germany from. And that's why Liverpool can't go to Leipzig. And so they had to figure out what they do. And now they are moving the game to Hungary, to Budapest, actually.
Oh, wow.
So Leipzig is playing Liverpool in Budapest, which is another country that is hit heavily by the coronavirus. And it is something that you just can't explain to anyone right now. Everyone is asked to stay at home and to stay safe and obey to the rules, while the rules just don't seem to apply for football players. And that is something that is very, very questionable right now. And people are getting really angry about that.
Wow. I mean, it's such a complicated situation because there's so much money on the line, to be honest with you, about a Champions League game. It's a crazy thing. I don't even know how they would handle it, but I don't blame anybody for getting mad either. It's just a crazy thing right now. A lot of people are restless. This whole thing is terrible, man. This whole situation, but hopefully it can get resolved soon. Hopefully they got some vaccines and stuff out right now. I don't know how that's all going to play out, to be honest, but hopefully it all works out. I'd be really happy if we could get back to some sense of normalcy for everybody. The only thing I can say, just to turn it one last thing on the team jumping argument. Well, like, so in that example, let's say Schalke is way out of it. What if you suddenly just took a liking to another team, maybe Liverpool, for example, and they've got great players like Salah.
It would never be the same.
Oh yeah, I don't think it's the same for him. I hope it's not the same, but he is a super fan. Like, would you buy a jersey or something, like a Salah jersey?
Well, I do own different jerseys from different teams, and I also own a Liverpool jersey. That's not the
Oh.
point. I just got them when we were playing football a lot a couple of years ago. Basically, every Sunday we went out, and I just got a set of different jerseys. But it's not like that. My heart is attached to any one of those.
Yeah, so like if Liverpool wins, I mean, I don't know if they're the team, maybe you're rooting against them, but I like Liverpool. When I watch Premier League, they're probably one of the teams I gravitate towards, to be honest. I like a lot of their players. But regardless, is there a team that you would be like, you're kind of rooting for, and if they made it to the finals, you'd kind of be into it?
Yeah, well, I've rooted for Liverpool for a long time, actually. Like, it's not like I'm a fan of them, but I'm just when I'm ever watching Premier League, I for years have been always looking out for all the Liverpool results. But it's as I said, it's not something that I would call fandom or anything.
Right. I understand that. I think we need to keep it that way because I know we have a lot of UK listeners that
Yeah.
might not be too happy about us declaring our allegiance to Liverpool on this show. But I wish well for all the Premier League teams out there and all the European teams. I like I said, Liverpool is probably the one I like the most because I like their players the most. But I'm not hating on any of the other teams too. So we're very, very nonpartisan when it comes to the Premier League teams.
Yeah, we should be. We should be. And from here on, Dylan, I think we should travel back to pro wrestling. And that's the most important part, of course, of this podcast. And going back to our last episode that we did with Mark, first I want to say how much you and I enjoyed the show. We talked about that off the air. We really were happy that Mark was on the show. And we're also very happy about how the show is received so far. And we hope that everybody really enjoyed us previewing the Budokan show and the interview with Mark.
Oh, completely. I really love doing that show. Big thanks to Mark Pickering to be on there. We had a lot of interesting things to talk about too, not even just the show, but some of his takes on some of his announcing, strategies and things like that. I thought it was very interesting when he talked about the Tokyo Joshi Pro show he did and how he would
Yes.
be more serious for the main event. I thought that was like a very good answer for, and a good way to think about it. So lots of interesting stories in the first half, and then we got to the Noah show and previewed that, and it made me even more excited for the show than I was already. Just talking to him about it and talking to you, obviously, as well. So I'm so happy that everybody liked it. That's something I always appreciate when people say nice things and give us props, I guess you could say. Even the Pro Wrestling Noah account on Twitter retweeted the tweet about it that we put out, and I thought that was very cool. So a lot of people, even all over the world, like I said, that's a thing that I love about this show especially, is that if you look at our numbers and stuff, it's always so many different countries that listen to us. Sometimes it's only like really obscure places or places where wrestling isn't popular. There's only like one or two people, but it's like all over the world you get people that listen to the show and care about Japanese wrestling. And I think this Noah show is going to get some new eyeballs, like we said on there with the English commentary option. And I can't wait to see it. And I'm really glad that everybody liked the show. So thank you for everybody who listened to that show with Mark.
Yes, the worldwide aspect is really cool, and I really enjoy that too, looking at all these places that people download the show from. That's really cool to see. And yeah, to this episode today, I'm glad to learn that at the beginning of the show, you called it a secret episode and not a forbidden episode.
That we're not supposed to say that.
We can't say the word forbidden
Oh, okay.
because, well, there is someone whose name apparently is now forbidden to be talked about in New Japan Pro Wrestling, in former president Harold May. He got edited out of footage on New Japan World, and I'm not sure if that has ever happened before. I don't know. Has it?
Not that I know of. I mean
Naoya Ogawa had his matches completely taken down, but that's something different. So
that's true. Brock.
I saw that on Twitter and I couldn't believe it. So I checked out the video. I checked out the Jay White versus Kota Ibushi final from G1 Climax 29 2 years ago. And after Ibushi wins, he's very exhausted. He has to get up on his feet. He kind of falls into the ropes. He's full of sweat. And you see in the background that someone is entering the ring with the trophy, but you can't see who it is. Then there's Red Shoes with a flag. And all of a sudden, there's a cut to the crowd. And then there's another cut. And you can hear it on commentary, too, that there is a cut. You can really hear the sentence changing. And all of a sudden, Ibushi has the flag and the trophy. And no one is in the ring again. That looks so fucking goofy, but it's so funny at the same time. Yeah, Harold May, he was president of New Japan until October of last year. We talked about his successor in his new position, Takami Obari, who was the president of the American brand of New Japan Pro Wrestling. And he is now the new president of the entire company. And, well, ever since then, it seems like New Japan has been making moves. And the last couple of days, even, have been pretty crazy, if you think about it.
Absolutely. Like, this is, to me, one of their biggest weeks in terms of their American expansion in a long, long time. So, and it's funny how all that happened all at once, kind of. You know, it's like we have... Yeah. Well, they were teasing the television deal that they had. They were teasing that. Obviously, what happened earlier in the week with Kenta, that came about. And then suddenly it's like, hey, somebody just found out. I don't know how they found out, if they were looking for it or what. But somebody was like, hey, they edited off Harold May from all these New Japan videos. And that's how you end up with situations like what you described there, which is very funny in hindsight. When we were talking about this off the air, and I actually quickly went on to New Japan World to see it myself while we were talking, because you described it to me. And I thought it was very amusing. And in true to form, you are a great storyteller, Striga, and it was very amusing, to
I'm
say the least.
Calling it like I see it.
Yes, it was very entertaining. So do you have any thoughts of this? Clearly it happened. What do you make of them editing him off?
Well, what I make of this is that for whatever reason, we don't have any business insight into New Japan or anything like that. We don't have any clues. We don't have anyone on the inside that gives us scoops or anything. But when you edit someone off your shows, off your videos, off your official TV airings, that has to mean that this person is now a persona non grata within your company. And it's crazy how quickly this person became a persona non grata, because, as I said, a couple of months ago, he was the president and he had a weekly column on New Japan, on the New Japan website. And now he's gone. Not only he's gone, but they are trying to, or not they are trying to, they are erasing him off their history. So, I don't know. I think this is unprecedented in New Japan history. I don't know.
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I think that, like, everything about it, I understand why they made that decision, you know, in hindsight. It's clear that they made a lot of moves that they very likely wouldn't have made if he was still around. Yeah. At the end of the day. And clearly there may be some bitter feelings about it for whatever reason. There's a lot of speculation because there's a couple of different ways you could point the, you know, a couple of different entities you could point the finger at. But I actually think it looks kind of petty, to be honest with you. Because, like, if he was in, even if they kept him in the video,
yes,
who cares?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So it makes him look kind of petty. Like, this seems like something WWE would do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like if somebody pissed them off for whatever reason or left it, you know, he left in a blaze of glory, this seems like something that would happen with them. So it seems like a really petty, nonsensical move to edit him off. But you also have to take into account that with whatever's going on, and what I believe, for, like you said, we don't have any secret inside info. Maybe we need to call Harold himself. And get him on the show, and we can talk to him, and he'll maybe not tell us anything in all likelihood. But to me, this isn't something. What happened on Wednesday was not something that just happened out of the blue. It's been something that's been talked about and bantied about and planned for a while now. Yeah. So for me, who knows what demands or suggestions, friendly suggestions, quote unquote, may have been made from their side as well. There may be some bitterness on the AEW end, you know, with people like Kenny Omega, who left and kind of wasn't very nice to New Japan on the way out, a lot of his interviews, you know, Young Bucks and all of that. Who knows if they might have said something that, like, look, we can't be associated with this. And this is purely speculation on my part. But to me, it's like, why would you do this unless, like, because it just seems so petty to me. But, I mean, it's wrestling, so it's completely believable that they would, in all honesty.
It really is. And I mean, of course, there would have been a match set up anyways with Jon Moxley still being the U.S. champion for New Japan. A title match would have happened at any point anyways. Yeah. But now it looks like that they're making more moves and more moves all of a sudden. Definitely something that I did not see coming is that now we have the main event of Kenta and Kenny Omega versus Jon Moxley and Lance Archer for Dynamite this week. That's something that I did not see coming. I figured they would do that within New Japan Strong, but Kenta appearing on AEW has definitely given this some new dynamics. If that has anything to do with the new president or not, that is a question I can't really answer. But you said this probably has been in the works for some time, and not only this week. But it does appear to me that the president of the former US brand, that this guy definitely has an interest in pushing New Japan into the American market. Then again, you have to keep in mind that New Japan has to be considered one of the biggest competitors for AEW. AEW, they have relationships with AAA, with Impact, with the NWA, but none of those groups actually, I do think, AAA to a degree, but Impact and certainly not the NWA, are any kind of real competition for AEW right now. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. That would be ridiculous to even say that.
And so the biggest competition for AEW right now is New Japan. And I would not expect a strong crossover in the next coming months or so. I would not expect a super show to be announced anytime soon. But in a world where New Japan and Ring of Honor together ran Madison Square Garden, and in a world where all of a sudden we have Kenta on AEW Dynamite this week, a lot of things seem possible, don't they?
Yeah, you know, it's just, I think that it's a sign that New Japan's really fallen hard in the West, to be honest with you. I think that the U.S. excursion has not been well done. You know, I think that they had a peak a few years ago when they did that WrestleMania weekend show where they had Omega and Ibushi versus the Young Bucks. It felt like New Japan was the hottest ticket in America. Now, this was obviously before AEW, but I was thinking then, I was like, man, something should have happened. They should have changed their plans. Something should have happened immediately. Like the day after, there should have been an announcement, USA, New Japan, you know, it's a thing. But they really held, they dug their heels in a lot. And when all of their guys left that were really popular with Bullet Club, Cody Rhodes, Kenny Omega, Young Bucks, AEW got a ton of hype, and it feels like New Japan's lost a lot of ground, not to mention that they lost their TV deal with Access TV, which is another aspect of all this. But I think it's, remember the tour they had, the US tour, which was just a terrible, just terrible showing where people couldn't come, they didn't have their visas, and it was a disaster. You know, there's no real nice way to say it. So there was a really a lot of mistakes made, I think, on the U.S. version. lately, the last 6 months or so, I think they've made some good steps forward with New Japan Strong. They've got this new thing coming, and now AEW. And the reason why I say I know that it was talked about was because we saw last month Kenny Omega wearing Bullet Club shirts on AEW on Impact Wrestling. Like, that's the thing. I loved all the speculations. People were trying to, like, talk their way into this. It's like, oh, well, they can wear the shirt, but they can't say the word. And then they said the word, and they're like, oh, well, I don't know anymore. It's like, no, like, if they wanted to cause problems with it, they wouldn't be doing that, you know? So you had that going on. You had Tama Tonga cutting promos on these guys. It's like, people believe anything wrestlers say these days. As soon as that all came out, I knew right away that something was up. You know, like, they're not going to bury their own friends, like, you know, and call them sellouts for just nonsensical reasons like that. Clearly, something was in play, and that was, what, a month, 2 months ago? So, to me, it had to be done around that time, if not even sooner. The stuff with Kenta coming into AEW, you're completely right. I had no idea this was on the horizon. I thought Kenta would be in Japan, to be honest with you, at this point. You know, they have their own shows coming up. We're going to talk about it in a little bit.
Yeah, so, but he was on no lineup. So there was a strong hint that he is in America.
And that was, you know, there you go. See, there's a little bit of a thing there that you could have took off, a little bit of a tip-off there. But yeah, see, so... Still, though, I wasn't expecting that. And like you said, very quick, he comes in. Basically, the angle on AEW, if you haven't seen it, was he runs in and hits this god-awful sleep on Moxley because they were having a big schmoz with the Bullet Club and Moxley. And yes, Kenta runs in and hits the go-to-sleep on Moxley.
Right. John Moxley in this episode was attacked by people from three different companies.
Yeah.
Which... If you say it like that, it sounds completely insane, but that's what happened. And yes, that sets up the US title match that they are going to do. And that also, when is that actually scheduled for? February 26th. That's scheduled for Strong. But we still don't know if that match hasn't already been taped, as we said in one of our last episodes.
I thought that at the time for sure. Like I said, because of all the restrictions and everything. Yeah. And I think, just to kind of piggyback off your point before, I think that's going to be the main thing more than anything. Like, with all the restrictions, how are these two companies going to come together to make some kind of big show or anything like that anytime soon? You know, like, that's really going to be their main building roadblock right now. But my point on it all was ultimately, like, I think New Japan is not that much of a competition for AEW, actually, in America at the moment, because they've really fumbled a lot in the last year or two. And this deal is way more beneficial for New Japan right now to even have themselves mentioned on AEW, because that's what they need right now. Like, to me, if I were the president, and it's clear that this guy has similar thoughts, my ideas would be, do what I can at all costs to get my product on TV somewhere. And the bigger channel, the better. And you're not going to get a bigger channel than TNT. I'm sorry. So to have one of your wrestlers in a main event angle in AEW, regardless of what happens next week, I think it's such a good thing for New Japan that they were able to pull it off, because this is a whole new audience for a lot of their guys. And yeah, there is crossover, but honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of the people that watched New Japan and AEW at the time, they drifted away from New Japan and focused on AEW. I mean, this is a small reading here, but I can tell you right now, look at cagematch.net, look at any review, any show on New Japan, and the numbers in terms of the number of votes are not as high as they were 2 years ago. You know,
that is a very good observation, definitely, yes.
And I mean, and like I said, that's a small sample size. I mean, relatively small. It's a pretty decent sample size, but it's still a lot less than it was 2-3 years ago. But AEW, their numbers are way higher. So to me, it feels like a lot of the fans that maybe loved New Japan before and thought it was the hottest ticket. Like I said, when that match happened at WrestleMania weekend, I felt, man, this company is the hottest thing going right now. They need to capitalize. And we see how things turned out. But I do think that this relationship, I don't think New Japan is viewed as that much of a competition to them. I think they're on a very similar level to Impact, you know, NWA maybe might be a little bit lower. But I mean, look at the TV network they're on, Strick. Like, you know, like, that's not a big competition to me when you see about what channel they're on.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking while we were talking, you said that there won't be a super show happening, and I said that pretty much too.
Yeah.
What do you expect for the next coming months? Will it only be restricted to the Kenta and John Moxley program? Or will they, for example, also bring in, I don't know, Shoto Umino?
That would be another worthwhile addition if they could do
Renarita
that.
Renarita is in America too?
Yeah, I would love to see him. I think that the most we can expect from the New Japan side, until this all works itself out, I think once the restrictions are lifted or eased up upon, I mean, and it is in Florida, to be fair, so maybe the restrictions aren't as great as they would be in other places. But still, though, once that all gets lifted up, I think we could see more speculation of a big show or something like that happening. I think that for the coming months, though, the most we can hope for is, like you said, getting some of the young guys in, Umino or Narita, which because they need time. They could be on Dark, and it wouldn't hurt anything if they needed to go there. The most we can see in terms of a big angle would be somebody like, the Guerrillas of Destiny. Or maybe even you could get a Jay White in there. Whoever can get into Florida, pretty much, I think would be the person you would look at, the people you would look at. And they would be the most important people to this storyline that they're in currently as well, would be the Bullet Club guys. So if I were to look out for anything, I do think that's possible. You get a Guerrillas of Destiny appearance in AEW. Maybe even Jay. You know, I mean, there was a lot of teasing going on in the last month with him, and we saw how that played out. But in the coming months, if they need another guys, more guys from New Japan coming in, it would make all the sense in the world to bring them in, because they already have statue in America that they can get in and out of the country with. So I think that would be the easiest, rather than like a Tanahashi would show up in AEW or something like that. I don't think that's going to be in the cards for the next little
while. We're saying they won't do Kenny Omega versus Kota Ibushi title for title?
I mean, that could happen next week.
next week on Dynamite.
Yeah, exactly. Let's just do it now. Let's just get it out of the way. but no, I do not foresee that happening anytime soon.
Yes, it's. I mean, it's cool to fantasy book, and I know that people really like to think about this cross promotion as something that could deliver these dream matches. But I would really keep my hopes down for any sort of that. As you said, Tanahashi coming to Dynamite, that probably won't happen anytime soon. But it's definitely an interesting and a cool thing to think about.
And you know, Strick, like, even if this is so minor, like, let's just say this ends in a month, and this whole thing was just to hype up the Kenta and Moxley match and get the belt, you know, get their title back. Then this is already a huge success for them. It's like you got one of your stars on AEW, on TNT, on national TV in America, and you hyped up one of your matches that feels so much bigger now than it would have otherwise. If it ends there and it's put on pause until whatever the future holds, that's still a huge win in my book for New Japan.
Yes, absolutely. It absolutely is. And to the point of competition, New Japan now announced that they will be on the Roku channel in America, in Canada, and the UK. They mentioned these countries specifically. We talked about that off the air, Dylan. Roku is not really a thing in mainland Europe. It is a thing in America, as you said. You got a Roku box, and I
have a Roku TV. I don't.
You have a Roku TV. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's right. You want to know what's on there right now? I can turn it on right now. It's sitting right in front of me. I'm hanging it on there. What's on Roku TV? That's what I want to know, on the Roku channel.
Yeah, I saw that Roku expects to be in 60 million homes in the U.S. by 2024. So that's a great number to base your TV shows on for New Japan Pro Wrestling. Dylan, what do you think is New Japan's target audience when they got onto the Roku TV channel?
I'm going to be completely honest with you right now. I think that they wanted to get on any channel possible, and like that, this was the one that they ended up with. So let's go through this. This is the Roku channel lineup right now. I turned it on. I'm looking at this live. I'm not telling any lies right now to all the listeners out there. This is exclusive content. You won't hear this anywhere else. So the weekend pick, that's what they have, a featured pick. Do you want to guess? It's a movie. Okay.
There are about 500,000 movies that I could guess from somewhere.
Okay, here's the thing. We need to apologize for one of our recent episodes where we did not give anywhere near about enough of credit to Sylvester Stallone. Demolition Man got tweeted at us. How did we forget that? A horrible botch on our part. But this is a Bruce Willis movie, okay? You didn't let me finish there, okay? It's a Bruce Willis movie from the 90s.
Is it an action movie?
Of course it is. Armageddon.
Oh.
Bruce Willis. 2 hours and 30 minutes here. We also have The Facts of Life from the 70s. Sliver with Sharon Stone, a 90s movie.
That's the competition New Japan is dealing with.
Hell's Kitchen? Hey, listen, Gordon Ramsay? I always thought he'd be great at wrestling. I tried to sign Ken up for that show once, because he's a cook on there. I wanted to see him go on there, but he got mad at me when I did that. Batman from the 60s, and Peppa Pig. So these are the family that New Japan is now in.
So, let me ask you this. How often do you watch the channel?
I'm not a big TV guy. in the best of times, no matter how big it is. But let's just say, to be honest, I will say this. I did watch The Nanny on there because the girl I liked The Nanny. Okay, so that was the only time I ever watched Roku TV, was for that show. Fran Drescher. A classic show. Me and my actual nanny watched that in the past when I was a very young child. So I have nostalgic memories of that, but that was the only time, and I do not think I will be tuning into Roku TV again based on the lineup that we just read. But the New Japan is still on there. And yeah, so bottom line, no, I don't watch it.
The thing is, how would people find out about this? Except for social media and except for wrestling websites, is Roku advertising on quote-unquote regular TV or anything?
Oh, well, if you have a Roku TV, their channel is, they're always plugging that. Like, as soon as you turn it on, you have, like, a home screen with all kinds of stuff on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually on there, pretty much. And I can definitely see that coming in. As soon as you turn it on, you'll see, and you'll have your menu with your Netflix, your Hulu, your Disney Plus.
Yes.
And then on the side, it'll have a huge advertisement for the Roku channel and whatever they have going on there. For that. So I could totally see something like Okada or Naito or Tanahashi being on one of those screens. You know, and it rotates too, so it's not like it's just one thing they put on there. It'll be the Roku channel with this or the other show or whatever. So that's about all I can see. I don't think they have a ton of advertising on regular TV. Whenever I watch, the only time I really watch regular TV is for sports, you know, basketball or football or whatever. But I don't ever see any commercials for them there, even on TNT, but who knows, maybe they might have something on there, because TNT airs basketball as well, so I do watch that every now and then, but I've never seen any commercials for it on regular TV.
Hmm. Really tough to say how many people in the end will then check out the New Japan show. So it's going to be World Pro Wrestling, the regular TV show that they also air in Japan.
Yeah.
Will
it have English commentary again?
I assume so. I expect Kevin Kelly to do that.
Right. This is a really small channel. if I haven't put it up, like, it's, you know, it's about the same as the MLW, you know, to be in sports level. Like, that's about the level we're talking here, and maybe even a little lower, like, to be honest with you. Because if you don't have a Roku TV or a Roku box, you're not getting this channel at the end of the day. So that already, you're already limiting yourself there. And that's kind of tough to be in bed with a TV-based channel, you know? I think that's going to be kind of a tough thing. But it is something, at least. It's more than what they had before, and I think that's all they were looking for. I'm sure, remember when TNA was on that, like, outdoor channel or whatever? The Hunting Network or whatever crap that was?
It was not the Hunting Channel. What was it called?
Oh, I totally forgot.
Completely forgot about it. Yeah.
But regardless, that was a really small channel. That was like a couple of thousand of people. But that was just a placeholder until they could get on Access. And I think that's exactly what this deal is about for Roku TV. It gives them a new, like, this New Japan might be their biggest show by the time they come on here. And for New Japan, and it gives them a placeholder to get their foot in the door and hopefully jump to a bigger network in the future. And who knows, maybe if they play nice with AEW, that would lead to them crossing paths with Impact, and maybe they could try and put the feelers out to Access again and get back on there and get their old deal back, which I think would be a much bigger deal than this Roku TV thing, because it really feels like to me this is just a really, really early phase one in terms of getting something bigger, because as it is, it's just not that big of a deal in America yet.
The Pursuit Channel.
The Pursuit Channel, that's right. it was so big that we
deliver the outdoors, exactly. Another door. Look at that.
Oh, this one was not as forbidden as others, I guess you could say here. But yeah, the Roku TV deal, it's a small channel, but it's something at the end of the day. They had nothing before. So at the end of the day, I really think that was one of the worst things that happened to New Japan for their English-speaking market. I think their Access show was kind of underrated. Because for us, like me and you, and I think most of the listeners to this show, we probably didn't care that much about that show because it was old matches. Yes. We see these matches live at the end of the day. But for other people, not everybody wants to watch that. Like, that's something that I think is kind of an underrated point, too. Not everybody wants to sit at their computer and watch stuff. They would rather watch it on TV. They'd rather, you know, watch regular TV if they have it. If they're still a cable subscriber or satellite subscriber, they would rather just watch it on the TV. So for those people, that's a different audience maybe than what me and you. But still, that audience was sizable for New Japan's popularity. And I think that they really just botched it terribly by losing that deal. And that's why they're at where they're at now, by on this Roku channel.
Yeah. I guess we'll have to see and find out how that works out in the end for New Japan, and if it's going to be a sustainable deal that gives them any kind of traction in America. Right now it sounds like the chances are not that high.
It's better than nothing, though. Like, yeah. I said, you will get advertisement. If you have a Roku TV, and I don't know how many of our listeners have one, I'll make sure to check it whenever they start this show. I'll make sure to keep an eye on it to see if I can see any advertisements in it more than anything. Because if they're plugging that, and I think they should, like I said, that would be one of their bigger series on this channel. I think that is a kind of an advantage for them, is that they're more like a flagship staple. If they can advertise this a good amount, I think that's a good thing for them, even though it's on a smaller level. But I think it's nowhere near as big as them teaming up with AEW and having Kenta on TNT. I think that was way more important than this TV deal, personally. If they can keep that relationship going, I think it's much, much more beneficial than this deal.
Yeah, absolutely. So that is the New Japan TV deal. Then also something that happened in New Japan this past week is the return of Jay White after, almost exactly 1 month. Jay White returned to action. And I don't know about you, Dylan. The moment he entered the ring and was just back with the Bullet Club, I again thought about what we said about his promo.
Yeah,
and
I know
about
where you're going with this.
Character dying, and it seems like he's just mean old Jay White all over again, right?
I thought the exact same thing. I was like, what a waste of this whole storyline. And it's just a really dropped ball, I feel like. To bring him back so soon, first of all, I think really kind of took away any impact the storyline could have had anyway, or his return could have had anyway. I think that if he came back 6 months down the line, let's just say he was out and they announced the G1 and he was the last guy announced.
Yes.
I think he would get a much better reaction. Like this.
That would be the perfect way to do it, but no.
Yeah, this return, I mean, what did it really even mean? Like at the end of the day, it's like he returned, he came back. Like you said, no changes in his character. He just came back to go after the six-man titles, is kind of what it feels like. Mm. And it's like, they had people talking with that promo. Whatever you think of the promo, that got a lot of publicity, a lot of buzz online. And his whole storyline had been pretty well done. I mean, us, obviously, we didn't buy it. But that said, there were tons of people out there that were saying all kinds of crazy stuff about him leaving.
I even came across people saying that they were watching the Royal Rumble and expecting Jay White to come in at any time. So people really bought into that, yes.
Exactly. And now for me, I think that's a terrible thing because we had another debut, which I was so disappointed by. Carlito came back to WWE.
Finally.
I wanted him to come back. I wanted him in New Japan, but unfortunately, things ended up where they should have, I guess, with Carlito back in WWE and Switchblade back in New Japan. But I think, like you said, people bought into the storyline for whatever reason, and to have him come back so soon, I think was a huge waste. And like you said, especially as his character, but even if he'd come back as a new character, I think, like, what can you do on January 30th or whenever he came back? It's just like, you already have a title match with Sonata and Ibushi. You already have a lot of stuff going on. To debut him in the middle of the tour, or not debut, but bring him back in the middle of the tour, I think is a huge waste. Even if they had just saved him until the New Japan Cup, I think would have been a lot better than to just debut him here. Because he feels like kind of a mid-card geek, to be honest with you, to come back here. He's messing around with Yoshihashi and stuff. And you know I love Yoshihashi. But this felt like a main event level angle they had with Jay, and I think they've really kind of downgraded it for no reason. I mean, what compelled them to do this?
That's an excellent question. There's one other thing that is on my mind about this.
Yeah.
So we thought after the promo that the Switchblade character was dead. Now he's back. And 1 month after that, he's just back on the Bullet Club side. And if they still have the idea of doing whatever kind of split they think they could be doing, they could, of course, do it, but they've brought back Jay White without any kind of doubt in the minds of the fans that he's just back with the Bullet Club.
Yeah, that
if they had done what you said about the G1 Climax. They just announce him as Jay White and he comes out and wrestles his matches on his own. People would start doubting his allegiance to the Bullet Club. But now, it seemed like that the Bullet Club was clued in all the time and he's just there. And if they do the turn now, what inner logic is there?
That angle is so cold that I don't know what the status of that is right now, because it feels like that's so important. Like, anything with evil right now is like death, in my opinion, on New Japan's card. Like so not over. Like, you couldn't even have a more cold character, I feel like, than him. And so I feel like that whole angle has really gone down the drain. I wouldn't be surprised if they pivot to something more than with this AEW stuff, to be honest with you, because that's a lot hotter than like whatever you're talking about with Evil and Jay that we've been talking about for a long time. That angle is way hotter than like that, the Jay and the Evil deal. So to me, it's like they may have already pivoted away from that. I wouldn't be surprised, and I honestly wouldn't object to that part, but I just think it's a big drop ball. They had a lot more gas left in the tank of Jay being gone, and like you said, to have some growth in his character, because it feels like he just came back and is just himself again, you know, like his old Switchblade self, like you said. So there was really no purpose to this leaving. If he had left, if he had stayed instead of leaving, it wouldn't have made any difference. Like, we'd be in the same spot we were in right now if he left. So how is that a good idea, you know, when you think about it? At least what we said and what you were saying, you kind of added on to it with him. Like you said, I had the same idea. Wrestle your matches normally on your own. Do a different thing, maybe come out with a different color gear or something like that. You can still have him in the Bullet Club at first, and he'll still be aligned, but he'll be doing things a different way. Mm-hmm. I think that would be so much more interesting and heat up that storyline again than where we're at now, because I think that Evil and Jay angle is so cold that I wasn't even thinking about that, to be honest with you. When he came back, I just thought, oh, well, I guess he's in Bullet Club again.
Puzzling.
It makes no sense at all. Like, for all of these reasons that we're saying, it just weird, weird booking. This whole angle, I think, was really, we might not, again, I can look at something as an analyst and say, maybe that didn't connect with me, because there was no doubt in my mind that he was going to be in New Japan this whole time. I never bought into him leaving. But that said, I can also objectively look at it and say, look, this got over. This got a lot of buzz. People were buying into it. That's a great angle. I can't criticize that. But to bring it back now and what they've done, it really ruined all of that and, like, just threw it away.
It did. And as you said, he's now going to be in the match for the 6-man tag team title, semi-main event of the show in Hiroshima on February 11, challenging with Tama Tonga Tangaloa, Yoshihashi, Hiroki Goto, and Tomohiro Ishii, the champions. And where do you go from there?
That's the thing. It's like, okay, let me ask you this. Maybe there is still a glimmer of hope left. Well, let's just say they do the turn there. They wanted to do it at a bigger show, like that, just a regular mid-tour show. They wanted to do it at the show itself. Maybe Bullet Club comes out and says, like, you never told us that you were leaving, or some bullcrap like that. Whatever they want to make up. They turn on him there. Would that save this all for you, or would it give it new life, or what?
No. No, it wouldn't. It wouldn't, because they brought him back like they did in the first place. You can't erase that anymore now.
Yeah, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Nope.
So to speak. It's really tough, but I don't understand this angle, putting them in the six-man title match on their own. It's like, if him as six-man champion, it's like you've already fallen pretty far down the card. And in fairness, I think that Chaos team is the best champions that those titles have ever had. I think they made them way more important than they were beforehand. They're the semi-main event of the show.
Better than Toru Yano and the Briscoe brothers?
Hard to believe, but somehow they've eclipsed them. But this is a semi-main event match, and that's a good thing. Maybe they've tried to elevate these titles. I think that's nice. But still, this guy main evented Wrestle Kingdom 1 month ago.
Yeah. But at the same time, the multi-man matches that New Japan has done this month have been pretty great. All the elimination matches they've done, they completely delivered, in my opinion, much like they always do. They always deliver, and this should be another one of that sort that could really be great. And they put a lot of heat on the heel team when they defeated Chaos very crushingly when Yoshihashi was completely destroyed in the match, and Hiroki Goto threw the towel for Yoshihashi. Was not a fan of that angle at the time, but it definitely heats up the title match. This is the Road to New Beginning tour, and they've done a lot of Kurikan Hall shows on this tour, and I'm more and more surprised that they haven't run the place to death yet.
Burned down the whole town.
Completely. Man.
Yeah.
They run Kurikan Hall so often, but people still come. So it's it seems like that New Japan is still somewhat of a hot ticket. And to another point, Dylan, I don't know about you, but I thought that their show that they did in Nagoya on January 30 was one of the best all over New Japan shows they have done in months. This show up until the semi-main event, I was already very high on that show, and I was preparing a speech and saying, this show was pretty good from top to bottom. There was no weak link on the show. Even the opening match was all right. And I was in my mind preparing the speech of saying, yes, there were shows that had higher heights than this one. And then the Tanahashi versus Shingo Takagi match happened, and we have it rated at 9.38 right now. So my opinion here stands. This was one of my favorite New Japan shows in a long time, and I would put it as a whole show. I would put it above of the Wrestle Kingdom shows. Not it's singular matches, but as a whole show.
It's worth mentioning this was a five-match show, too.
Yes.
Out here. I thought that just to run through the card like real quickly here, I didn't like the opener anywhere near as much as you.
It has rated 4.6 on Cage Match, and the Cage Match users don't like it either. It was fine, yeah.
Even Big Dave gave this a 1.25 star here.
Yeah. As you said, anything with evil is death right now.
Yeah.
I am not hyped for Okada versus Evil.
Oh, they have terrible chemistry too. Like, what happened to them in the G1 that 1 year? They had that one great match, and every subsequent meeting has gotten worse and worse. And I just thought that they looked bad here. Yano might have been the MVP of that match. You could argue here. The 8-man tag I thought was, I think that's so kind of amusing that they're doing this Honma Naito feud. It's just so weird, like some of the feuds they've got in. But they've given the old guys some love, so I'm not against it. I don't think Honma looked good in the match, though, unfortunately. And I think that the match itself was okay. I didn't think it was bad at all. I didn't think the Okan and Tenzan match was bad either. This got a really low rating from Dave, actually. I thought it was...
Yeah, and I have no clue why this rating is so low, because in my opinion, this match completely achieved what it was supposed to achieve.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you. I think I said something like that. I did a Patreon show for this, patreon.com/EasternLariat, the day of, or right after it happened. I did a show for the show. And I said, I think, exactly the same thing. This accomplished everything it needed to. Okan's not a good worker, though, I think is the problem. And I'm not a big fan of him in-ring. He's really not great. Tenzan, I thought, actually brought it, relatively speaking here. But I thought he showed great fire. He tried his moonsault, nearly landed on his head in that match. But I thought he really put the effort in to make this work. Okan, yes. His gimmick is so over the top that I can see it getting over.
Yeah. Dude, now that he has the Mongolian chops, I mean, this was the stipulation of the match.
It was good booking, too.
Yes, it was good booking, too. And also, Hiroyoshi Tenzan is honoring the stipulation because on the Giant Baba show they did in early February, he was trying to do the Mongolian chops, but then remembered that he has lost the move. And so he stopped himself. But the question remains, what happens if Tenzan does the Mongolian chops? What kind of punishment is there for him?
He gets locked in prison. he loses it all. I mean, that's a great question. You would think it would be a DQ or something like that.
The refs in New Japan don't have any authority, so why would they DQ him?
That's a great question there. They don't DQ anything else, but this. Yes. He's gone too far. He used the Mongolian chops. What happens if there's a brawl or something with Tenkozy and he suddenly breaks out a Mongolian chop?
Yeah. Then they get thrown out of the building. I don't know.
Locked in prison. That's the only answer that we could give that's satisfactory.
But actually,
he must go to jail.
Actually, that was not the point where I was going to.
Oh, okay.
But it was just a minor detail that is pretty funny to think about what happens if Tenzan does it. The more important thing here is, as you said, the character is so over the top, the Great Okan character. Him doing the Mongolian chops, that should look menacing. That should look like the heel is about to lay the punishment on the babyface. But in reality, I have to laugh about the Great Okan because he moves so goofily when he does the Mongolian chops.
Yeah, he's bad, man. Like in the ring, I'm not a big fan of his at all. In terms of wrestling, but I do think that he's going to get over with this gimmick because it's so goofy.
Yeah.
And this was a great win for him. Like, this is the perfect win. I think this overachieved from what I thought it would be, to be honest with you, because you think about it, broken down Tenzan and Okan, and I was like, But then you watch the match, and it was totally fine. Like, I thought it was a perfectly fine match. I didn't think it was great. But like you said, it achieved what it set out to do at the end of the day. I don't know about Okan as a wrestler.
Yeah. I mean, the character will go over, yes.
Yeah, I think the character will get over. Like, we already seen signs of that even in the crowd. You've got somebody dressed enough like him in the crowd, at his entrance attire and stuff like that. He's got a crazy look to him.
I do think that he's still trying to figure out what to do with the character, which is why a lot of things look terrible at the moment.
Yeah.
And he's trying to balance out what works and what doesn't.
I agree with you. I agree with that. He's a talented guy. I just think that the gimmick is a little bit of a tough sell. But hopefully he can get it done. It's clear that they're going to push him a lot. So he'll have every chance to make this work at the end of the day. So it's nothing to worry about. Even if he is not great now, I think it's nothing to worry about for his long-term prospects. And his gimmick, like we were saying, is going to get over regardless. So it's kind of interesting that is the dynamic we saw. And I thought this was a great booking to take the win off Tenzan. Tenzan's probably going to retire soon.
Yeah,
you know, he really has no purpose anymore without these chops. So if you're going to do that, this is a great little thing to do in your last months of your career, last year of your career. Give your move over to a new guy, put him over strong, and a guy that, you know, you think about Tenzan, it's not like he's exactly a world beater in the world of New Japan, but through this gimmick and through this booking, they made this match matter somewhat, and I think that's very impressive.
Absolutely. And before we move on to the next match here, one more point I have, not on the Great Okan specifically, but on the gimmicks they do. Gabriel Kidd and Yota Tsuji, they have wrestled very cool matches this month, and Gabriel Kidd at this point has developed this great finishing sequence where he rolls through with the small package and does a double arm suplex out of that. Looks really gorgeous.
Oh, yeah.
Then again, the Young Lions, they look more and more like they are in a completely different universe than any other wrestler in New Japan. And with every guy coming back with a gimmick like this, like the Great Okan or Master Wato, with every guy coming back with a new crazy over-the-top gimmick, the Young Lions, in my opinion, look more and more out of place in New Japan Pro Wrestling. What's your take on that?
I completely agree with you, but I think it's a good thing because they need some sense of levity and realism to their company a lot of times, which I think has gone out the window a lot of times with their recent booking and things like that. I think having the Young Lions on the show gives you something to believe in and you know is real. You know these guys are rookies, and they're giving their all to try and make this work, even on opening matches. It's not necessarily about wins and losses, but you know that they're real, like, which I think is so much better than a Great Okan, a guy clearly playing a gimmick at the end of the day. And I think you need that on the show. And there's room for gimmicks, and I think this Okan gimmick will get over, like I said. But for my taste, my sensibilities, I think having them is necessary almost, because without them, it's like it's a whole... Like the opening match of the show that we're talking about was a Yano and Evil and Yujiro match. You know, would I rather see that, or are the Young Lions better? To me, I think the Young Lions add so much more than that match. Or any kind of similar type of match.
It really is the core of what New Japan says they stand for. I have to think about what I say here for a minute. then again, of course, they are real. They are supposed to be real. And then they get sent to excursion. They get to go to a different country, and all of a sudden they return as cartoon characters. It doesn't make any sense.
And who is more over? Kawato, the Young Lion, or Master Wato?
Well, clearly, Kawato, the Young Lion.
And, you know, so that you would think they would learn something from all of this, but unfortunately, it feels like you said, I totally expect when Narita and Umino come back, I think Umino, because of the Red Shoes connection, may be able to avoid it somewhat, but I think there's a very strong chance, even with him, that these guys are going to come back like goofballs and with crazy hair, an over-the-top dramatic entrance attire, some kind of crazy robe, maybe even a backstory like they gave Wato. They could give him something completely different than we know them as. And that would suck because, man, Narita especially, I think he's my favorite. Like, that guy's such a good worker.
I do think that there's a chance for Narita too, because he is with Shibata right now. Maybe they see something there that they could bring him in as the protege of Shibata and then give him some legitimacy through that. And with Shota Umino, you said there's the bond through Red Shoes. That is some very weak straws we are holding on to right now.
So that, I'm kind of feeling the same way. It's like we're trying to convince ourselves, not the listeners right now. Like, I'm sorry, guys. So, like, my expectations are kind of low from this. In my heart, I know this cannot be well. But if that happened, I hope that happens because these guys are so good. Umino and Narita were both great talents. And I think Narita was just an incredible in-ring performer for his length of time in the business. So I really hope that they don't go too crazy with these guys. But, I mean, we've seen it over and over and over again with all of these guys pretty much. The closest we've come to, like, a somewhat real gimmick was Roppongi 3K. When they came back, I thought that was a great gimmick for these guys, like an idol type, a K-pop-esque type of deal. I think that was a great gimmick. Yeah, it totally fits them. They came out with a great look. Show is just jacked, like super ripped. The gold and the silver, I thought they were a good look there. You have the baseball cap. They have different singles attires. I think that was a good gimmick for those guys. If they can bring something like that for Narita and Umino, I think that would be a lot better than this Great Okan gimmick, because I think, like you said, it's clear that he's struggling on an in-ring level to try and put this together. It's not even his fault. He's in a really tough spot. And maybe one day he'll get there, maybe one day he'll get there. But still, I think you're handicapping a lot of these guys by putting them in these crazy gimmicks rather than accentuating their strengths, which I think if I were running the show, that would be my goal 100% of the time with everybody, is to try to accentuate their strengths, not give them something to overcome to prove that they can make anything work.
Yeah. So on the point of weird gimmicks or of over-the-top gimmicks, Will Ospreay, for whatever reason, has toned it down a bit from being the quote-unquote Commonwealth Kingpin.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I still don't know.
What does that mean, Stringer?
But they are now the United Empire. Okay, yes. But he has somewhat toned the character down. He's not walking around in a suit. At least he did not on this show or on this
He had
tour.
a guitar
He had a
this time.
guitar with him, yes, okay. But it was an ODQ match.
He's now the new Double J. The real Double J now is his new gimmick.
But to be honest, this match was pretty great. Satoshi
Oh, yeah.
Kojima was a great opponent for Will Ospreay. They had some crazy things done in this match. The spot with the ladder was done perfectly, and the bump that Will Ospreay took was crazy from the top. Satoshi Kojima, in my opinion, completely delivered. And if this guy is not put in the G1 Climax this year, then he'll never ever be in the G1 Climax ever again.
Listen, I'm not really confident that that's going to happen, unfortunately. But he deserves it. I mean, he's a look at this. Look at what he did here. Like, to be honest with you, this is a great match,
Yes.
And in an unlikely circumstance for a guy like Kojima, he totally made this work. And I think this kind of match works so much better than it would in any American company, because it's so rarely done to see this. With the ladders and the tables, you get some stuff. Like, there's lots of weapons and interference and bullcrap. But not as specifically how they did it here. I think they were able to overcome the reliance on tropes of weapons and things like that in New Japan. I think they were able to overcome it into something in a legitimately really, really good plunder match here with Kojima and Ospreay. Ospreay just did his best to take all kinds of crazy bumps here. You have to respect that effort more than anything. Kojima looked great doing his thing. Anytime he gets a big spotlight match, even in this match, or if it was a regular match, like you said, if he was in a G1, he would totally perform so strong and do a lot of great things. But this match totally worked. Again, I think it accomplished everything it needed to here. You had the big bumps that they were taking here. You had creative spots. You had stuff with the ladder when he went through it, when Ospreay went through the ladder. I thought that was crazy there. And you had a great finish and
And
put Ospreay up really strong. Yeah, the
the table
table
spot that
too.
Kojima did, one of the best table spots I've seen in New Japan in a long time. Kojima went through the table and really sold it like he was completely out.
He did a great job, man. Kojima is just a total package right now as an in-ring performer. The hidden blade with the chair too, I thought was a great
Oh
spot.
yeah.
Yeah, so like you had a great moments in this match.
And as you said, it's some real creative moments in this. There is, of course, Evil with his chair and Dick Togo with his ropes there. But this match had, I call it on Twitter, a collection of bumps you won't see a lot in New Japan. That's
Yeah,
what it
perfect
was.
description. Perfect description of this match.
Yeah. So put over Ospreay strongly. Tenkoji was beaten completely here, and this then starts the rebuild of the Empire. Makes me wonder why they always, and in a lot of cases, they go with a new act. The new act loses at first, and then they have to rebuild him from scratch again. That's what they do a
Yeah.
lot. They even did it with Switchblade when he returned from Excursion. He lost to Tanahashi, and then they started building him.
Yeah, I mean that's a very traditional method of booking in Japanese wrestling,
Yeah, it is.
to be fair. But I agree. Like to me, it's like I would just put them over. If I want to push a guy, I just push him. I don't say, "Well, you have to lose first," because
To
that's
be
how it's done.
fair for the Empire, I think it was a good way to go because it put over how frustrated they were after they lost in the Tokyo Dome, and now they came back and destroyed Tenkoji. And of course, we're going to see Great Okan and Tanahashi again. Yeah, the main event of the show. Tanahashi defeated Shingo Takagi for the Never Openweight title. My hopes that this will be a true Openweight title are still somewhat alive, but it's very clear that this is going to be the number two title. And I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to tell you why. Because there still is Hiromu Takahashi. I can see Tanahashi and Hiromu Takahashi having a program, and then it would be somewhat of an Openweight title. But yes, it will be the second heavyweight title. The match, Dylan. You already did a review on the Patreon. What did you think about this one?
Oh, I thought it was awful. No, I'm
Not
kidding.
awful.
I can.
There's one actually, one 2.0 and one 3.0 vote on Cage Match actually.
That's way over the top. I would say, yeah, even if you didn't like the match as much as me, I think that's a little dramatic, like to be honest. But I thought this match was completely incredible. This would have been in my top 10 last year if it happened in 2020. I think it was just an incredible match. Tanahashi, once again, has just... This man can do no wrong. It feels like in New Japan right now, whenever he's put in position to have a big match, here we go. That's Shingo Takagi. What a worker this guy is. I mean, Wrestler of the Month, he was my pick for January. And why am I not surprised?
Listen, yeah. I made the case for him. Best worker in the world right now.
This month he definitely is. Like that match with Jeff Cobb and then this. It's like when that match with Cobb happened, I was like, whoa. It's like this was the best match of Cobb's life. And Shingo did a great job in that match. And then you see this match, and I was like, damn, this match is even better. Both of those matches were so awesome, though, I wouldn't begrudge anybody who said the Cobb match was better, because that was my favorite match at Wrestle Kingdom. I know it was yours, too.
Yes.
But I thought this match was actually even better than that. And I thought Shingo was a huge part of it, obviously. And definitely justifying yours and anybody's position that this guy is, I think everybody, or at least a lot of people, would consider him an elite tier worker. Number one overall is tough. It's like that could change any day. At the end of the day, like New Japan Cup could happen and Ishii could have like three straight amazing matches and we're like, okay, Ishii's the best one now, or Hiromu or something like that. So there was a lot of great wrestlers out there, but right now, Shingo, I thought he did such a good job in this match. And I love the way they ended up tying this all together. This was a long match. This was 35 minutes, but I thought they brought it all together so strongly by the end. It felt like a war had truly happened between these two guys, and especially Tanahashi with his advanced age. And with this, they did a great job of combining their styles. Tanahashi's not a traditional never-style guy the way Shingo is. So to have him bridge the gap of his style into Shingo's style, I thought they both worked it so strong. It was such a good match. There were a few flubs, minimal flubs at this point, but still just a little bit of stuff earlier on. Maybe it started out a little bit slow. I know that's a criticism I've seen of the match, but to me, I thought it all came together so well that it made that stuff matter more. So I thought this was an incredible match. The finish was awesome. I thought it was interesting that Tanahashi won here after everything. But I
me too.
Yeah, I think it goes to show that like what you said was exactly my thought. I said it on the Patreon. You can look at it one of two ways here. If you want to be a Super Shingo fan, you could say because New Japan in their history, often if you drop a title, if you lose, that means you're getting pushed next.
Exactly.
So you could say that. But I also think like the real main part of this was that this is now the new IC title, and they think Tanahashi is the best person to hold it, which I think is totally justified thinking, to be honest. And I think he's a great champion for however long he holds it. And I thought this match was awesome. Just a great, great, great performance for both men.
Why they don't just use the IC title as the secondary title is a topic for another discussion.
Isn't that good? Didn't Ibushi say he wanted to get rid of that?
Yeah, sure, he did. But combining hopefully the titles in the first place is a very big question mark.
Oh, I don't think so at all. I'm so happy if they get rid of it. Like there were way too many titles.
Now it's the never title. That's the secondary title.
Now it has much better purpose than what it had before, which was purpose.
That's right. It's a discussion for another time, but it to me it's puzzling that there is not, they now they have to heat up the never title. To the match itself, your points are completely true, of course, and I want to add two elements to this. The first one is that basically it combines to one big element. Yeah. The idea of the match was that Shingo Takagi wanted to prove that Hiroshi Tanahashi is an old man. And he even approached Tanahashi and said, if you lose, I want you to be out. I want you to be gone from the G1 climax. And he wanted to show that Tanahashi is an old man. And he thought that in bringing his speed to the match, the speed that he, of course, is used to from being in Dragon Gate for a long time, that he would out-wrestle Tanahashi and expose him for the old man that he is. But that completely backfired because this match went in a different direction than many people probably thought it would. It was not Shingo Takagi adjusting to the speed of, or to the lack of speed that Tanahashi showed in recent months. It was Tanahashi stepping up to Shingo Takagi and thus proving that he is still, well, he's gotten older. We can see that, of course, but he is not an old man that can be beaten easily by a younger talent. And that is a key element to this match, that Shingo Takagi was so overconfident and went into this match to prove that, and in the end lost and had to admit complete defeat to Hiroshi Tanahashi. And that was a great element to the story, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great point that you just made there. And a great little addition to this match. And this is a first-time ever match, by the way. Like, a first-time singles match. And I think that's great that they saved it for this. And you talked about heating up the NEVER title. This was the match to heat it up. I think it's heated up already. When Tanahashi's the champion after this match, I just thought it was so great. I'm so glad that they did it as a main event of a show rather than just a random G1 match, which I think was kind of a mistake in hindsight with Shingo and Ibushi to have it on a random G1 show. And that match didn't really – I mean, that was a great match and all, but it didn't live up to our expectations at the time. And I think this match, it delivered all of the expectations that you could ever have. I think Tanahashi, I think this guy's as good as he's ever was. I don't know if this is controversial or not, but all the evidence I see is that anytime you put him in some nonsense tag team bullcrap match with Taichi, okay, yeah, he's not that great in those. But when he has a big singles match versus Naito, versus Shingo, versus Goto even in the G1, this man is one of the best workers in the company. Like, to me, he's a top five worker at worst. And you can easily make the case he's actually up there. And it's weird because I think he's actually, you know, compared to Shingo, I think Tanahashi's a little bit underrated, if anything, because I think some people have all, they always want to dig this guy's grave. It's been going on for 5 years now. You know, 5 and 6 years, they've been saying he's ready to move on and move down the card. No, he is not ready to move down the card. Look at this match here. There, five people on the roster could have had a match this good, and he's one of them. Like, to me, this man totally deserves to be a main event player and somebody carrying the secondary title. I think he's an incredible performer to this day. And the old man stuff, yeah, that's great as a storyline. But, man, I want to see this guy have a long title reign. I don't know if that's going to happen with Okan challenging. They might want to put the rocket on him.
I was just going to say, Dylan, yeah. I'll continue your point, sorry.
It feels very similar to when he won the main title last time. And they went right to Jay afterwards. It feels somewhat similar to that. But would they really have the guts to put Okan as the number two champion?
Once again, I don't know why New Japan does that so often, that they do matches that neither wrestler should lose.
Yeah, that's
they do it very often.
They do that. You're completely right.
So it's a total New Japan move. So let's look at this. Tanahashi just won the title, and with him, the title is heated up, as you said. And he should go on to a lengthy run with it to establish it as a title that can main event bigger shows. At the same time, he's facing Great Okan again, and they are in the middle of rebuilding the United Empire.
Yes.
And Great Okan shouldn't lose this match. So what do you do?
I think Tanahashi should win, honestly, but the storyline they're telling, to me, he's just not ready to be that level. You would think, if anything, I think what's very possible could happen is they could transition. And wouldn't it make perfect sense to do this, by the way? Because we just saw him eliminate Tenkozy, go for another old guy. Tanahashi works his way through the Empire, has a couple of matches, maybe with even Cobb after this, and then it's set up to put over Ospreay in the summer for this title. Yeah. I think Ospreay's been pushed a lot more than Okan, who's not. Like, to me, there's just no way I can say that he's ready to be the number two champion.
Mm. Yes, I can see that. Makes sense. Do you think, as you said, in losing, you usually get pushed more in New Japan?
Yes.
This immediately makes Shingo Takagi one of the front runners for the New Japan Cup for me.
Totally. I was thinking that same thing. I said that on the Patreon. I was like, man, it's crazy how that works in New Japan. Every time you lose a title, it feels like you're right on the cusp. And to be fair, he is somebody who's actually... Again, much like I just said with the Empire kind of deal, if they wanted to have him beat Okan, that would give storyline justification for him losing. Shingo is in a perfect spot storyline-wise because his faction mate is challenging for the title this month. So it would be very logical to have Ibushi try and go through LIJ. Yes. And it maybe could build up into another Naito match, you know, before the G1. That would kind of be a similar deal. And Shingo would be the perfect person to do it. He could win the G1, or not that he could win the G1, but he could win the New Japan Cup and set up a win for, set up a match for Ibushi. And I even speculated before. It seems like a lot of times in New Japan, too, we saw it with Omega all the way back to then, and I'm sure Tanahashi probably did, Okada, obviously. I get the feeling that the champion, his voice, he has a voice, you know? And I could totally see something with Ibushi. Maybe he wasn't as satisfied with their first match in the G1, which Shingo won, by the way, as well, which would give another reason for them to have a match. He might not have been satisfied. He may have said to someone, look, I have an idea for a match with Shingo. We can really blow it out of the water. Main title match, main event style. We can really get this guy up there, and it would be an incredible match. I could totally see that happening, too. So there's a lot of, like, anecdotal evidence that Shingo could be the guy to be the next challenge.
Yeah, and a Shingo Takagi versus Kota Ibushi match in the main event of Sakura Genesis would be great.
It would be. Makes sense. It would be an incredible match, you would think. Like I said, I think they could do way better than their G1 match, personally.
Yes.
If they get a bit of a spot with the title, I think they're going to really go all out and just blow the roof off the whole Sakura Genesis if that happens. On the other hand, though, the only thing that would give me hesitance towards that, because I think under normal circumstances, like let's say the IC title was still around and this same match had happened in the main event, I think I would be more confident of it. The one thing that gives me pause in this case is that it's clear that they see that title as much more important than it was in the past. Like, this is now the number two title, like we said. Could it have been that they don't even see Shingo at that level, and they see Tanahashi at that level? And that could have been it.
That's a good question.
And that's the side. I don't mean to be negative, because I want him to win. Like, I really want him to get that title shot, Stricker. But I do think that that's possible based on how they booked him before. It feels like he's been stuck in mid-card city. But he has had great performances. Maybe people are sticking up for him backstage. Maybe Naito's even saying, hey, look, this guy's incredible. Like, we got to do more with Shingo. Who knows? You know, well, like, that stuff we don't know.
We probably can make a conclusion to that in a couple of months down the line. But if they don't see it after this match, they'll never see it.
I don't know how they didn't see it after that comp match. Like, to me, after that, it's like, I don't know how they didn't see it last year. Like, to me, remember before they went on their break for the pandemic, this guy, not only was he having great matches, this man had set up four different feuds at once with his mic skills and his promo work. He was going after Ishii, Goto, Hinari. And it's like, man, this guy, Show, too. Yeah, Show as well. Four different people there. And they kind of blew off the Show deal, and that was a very satisfying. Great matches with him. They blew off the Ishii thing. He had his matches. I don't think they really went to Goto more than once. But regardless, they more or less got through everything. Obviously, Hinari wasn't able
For whatever reason, Shingo Takagi is now doing the GTR.
Future tag team, maybe.
His matches. And I've not put together the clues why that is, that he's doing the move now.
Hey, didn't he do that in the tag league all the way back then?
Yeah, he did.
I think, yeah, that's what I was going to say, because I think I mentioned that. I was like, I remember saying that. Like, was that on the tag league?
Yeah, he did it again in the match against Tanahashi.
Yeah, that's right. He did it against Tanahashi. Yeah, he's using the GTR. I don't know. I mean, they're kind of similar, to be honest with you. Just stylistically, like, they're really a great pair for each other. Their match last year was really good, too. And the their G1 match 2 years ago was awesome. Like, one of the best matches that year, I thought. This February match wasn't as good as that, but it was still good. And I think that if they had some kind of team, that would be awesome. I think that that's something that they need. I know you're going to just completely scoff at what I'm about to say. But they've needed a shakeup in the factions for so long, and especially in Chaos. That wouldn't it be better if these two united and formed some kind of new faction? Like, the Trios champions are Shingo. Like, Shingo jumps over and they break off from Chaos. New group.
Chaos will never die.
Maybe you could still have Chaos, but those guys break off from it. Like, maybe you can even throw a Junior Show, and like him and Shingo have some kind of respect angle. Maybe they have a match in New Japan Cup, and they shake hands afterwards. And then those two, Goto, Yoshihashi, and Ishii, form a unit.
Well, nice fantasy booking, Dylan.
Why is he doing the GTR? We have to come up with an answer, Stringer. You can't just say you're crazy. You have to give me a solid counterpoint.
I don't have a counterpoint. I'm very clueless on this on this situation. I only know that it's happening, and the one thing I know is that Chaos is not going to disband or change. But Chaos has been the same for 5 years now.
Well, Osprey left it.
Yeah, he did. He kind of did. Yes.
Yeah. See, so you could. I mean, if Goto leaves, it's not the end of the world. If the Trios champions leave Chaos, it's not like the foundation
was
of
Osprey
the...
even in Chaos was he?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, right.
A ton of storylines. Have you even been paying attention?
I'm confused because Chaos right now is crossing over with the main unit often that I was wondering if Osprey had changed to the main unit and had left Chaos before. But you're right, of course.
No, I said no. But like if those guys leave, it's not the end of the world. At the end of the day, like Chaos can still they have Okada and Yano. They're the main guys of Chaos, really. So. I don't think that would be bad. But, I mean, realistically, though, I don't think that's going to happen. But at least it would explain how Shingo did the GTR, and I would love it. That's like all my favorite guys in the company. So if Hiromu could jump ship, then it's really the greatest faction. They could do it. But I think, all honesty, though, you know, with like look at the state of the card right now. Real talk right now. Kojima, Tenzan, and Honma are in main feuds. Are you telling me that there's not room for shakeups in New Japan right now?
If there's any room, then now. But I don't know, man. The Bullet Club is still around. Chaos is still around.
I totally get where you're coming from. But I'm just saying, it's like, man, this is some really crazy times. When they did it, they're putting Honma in a main event feud. That's so crazy.
That's exactly a main event feud.
Well, versus Naito.
Yeah, it's
you're
Naito is not a main eventer right now.
You're right. I apologize. That was a dumb thing for me to say. But I mean, Naito was in the main event of a Wrestle Kingdom show 1 month ago. It seems like that all happened.
But
like
Bushi gets more TV time than he gets now.
That's true. He has a singles match as well on these upcoming shows.
Let us look at these upcoming shows. So they're doing a double shot in Hiroshima Sun Plaza Hall. First, this is on Wednesday, opener Minoru Suzuki, El Desperado, Yoshinobu Kanemaru against the young guys, Yota Tsuji, Yuya Uemura, and Gabriel Kidd. Second match, Master Wato against Bushi. So Master Wato gets his comeuppance, maybe. Then another round of Chaos versus Bullet Club. Okada, Yano, Goto, Ishii, and Yoshihashi against Evil, Yujiro, Taiji Ishimori, El Fantasma, and Dick Togo. Kota Ibushi and Tomoaki Honma against Tetsuya Naito and Sanada in a match to prelude the heavyweight and IC title match on the day thereafter. Then the Guerrillas of Destiny defend the IWGP Tag Team title against Taichi and Zack Sabre Jr., another rematch. And in the main event, junior title match, Hiromu Takahashi against Sho. That's the card for that show.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of cold feuds on that card, to be honest with you. But the main event should be a great match, I feel like.
Yes, the card is just built around this one match, basically.
Yeah, like even then, I feel like a lot of the main feuds right now are cold. Like, that Tanahashi Shingo match blew up, and everything else is just kind of like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Like, you know, Tenzan and Okan and Honma and Naito, it's like, wow, they're really doing this? And the main event feuds, it's like... You couldn't find the main events on these shows with a search party. Like, even this show match, the show in Hiromu, it feels like this should have been way hotter. I don't know what the problem is, really, because they're such great performers, and this match should rule. So I don't know why it seems like it's such a non-factor right now. I heard so much more talk about that those two matches on the other show than I've heard anything about these matches.
Yeah, me too. It's I don't know, this main program is not doing it.
So who do you think would? I mean, I'm guessing you don't think Sho is gonna win the title.
Yeah, that's unfortunate because it's. What do you do with Sho now? Yo is still out. There is really nothing that you can do with him, and it would be so much better to move Hiromu Takahashi into a different direction and give Sho the title. But I don't see that.
No, I don't think that's gonna happen. Unfortunately, but I agree with you. I think that should be their grand plan. But right now, I think Hiromu just won the title. He's not going to drop it in a month. I think Hiromu's going to win, and I think Sho's a great performer. He's always kind of like... I think he is kind of going to be similar to Desperado, where he's super mid-card, but puts on, you know, matches that people like. at the end of the day, and they can move him up if they need to do something at a New Japan Cup or something like that. Sho will be one of the first guys they put in that position. You know, he could do a job to somebody like a Shingo or a Goto and put on a great match to stand out. But I don't think they have plans for him with the title right now because Hiromu is so far ahead of everyone else in the division. I think that's a problem, like, to be honest. And that's kind of my issue with Hiromu, the juniors, more than anything, is that he's so far above everyone else that it's kind of tough right now. But it should be a great match, though, so I'm looking forward to it. What about the tag team titles? You think the Techers get them back?
Well, they did a great story with the Iron Fingers from Hell. Tama Tonga stole the Iron Fingers, but Taichi now has it back. Yeah, this program, as I said in our Wrestle Kingdom review, these are two heel teams doing heel stuff against one another. It's not doing it for me either.
I think it's going to give away the six-man match on the next show. Whoever, you know, if the Gorillas win, that's kind of a... I'm never a big fan of that style of booking, where it's like somebody gets back-to-back title shots, because it gives away what's going to happen on the second night, pretty much. It's like, it's hard to imagine why the Gorillas would get both titles. I don't know. I mean, well, I guess we'll talk about it on the next show.
They could go in that direction. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah, we'll talk about it on the next show.
Yeah. So, yeah, the next one, the day after, they changed the card around for the Never Openweight six-man tag team title match. Of course, the original opener was Hiroki Goto, Tomohiro Ishii, and Yoshihashi against Yota Tsuji, Yuya Uemura, and Gabriel Kidd. Now, this is going to be, I think it's again Suzuki-gun. Yes, again, Suzuki-gun in a different fashion. Taichi, Zack Sabre Jr., and Doki facing the Young Lions. Then there is Minoru Suzuki, El Desperado, and Yoshinobu Kanemaru against Yujiro Takahashi, Taiji Ishimori, and El Fantasmo. By the way, what did you think about the Junior Heavyweight Tag Team title match?
I didn't love it, to say the least.
I gotta say, at some point in the match, I was highly entertained because they were just doing every heel trick in the book. For the match itself, it was entertaining.
That's all you can ask for.
That story doesn't have any legs, you know? You can't do that all the time.
It's funny because, again, Meltzer must have been really down on this tour because it's like the match on Cage Match has a 7.09 rating and his is 1.25 star. So I think I might have hacked into Dave's match rating system there on this one. But yeah, very low rating, and I can't say I disagree with his version more than the inmates on that one. But yeah, you know, and like you said, it may not have been a great match. I mean, it wasn't a great match by any technical measure. But
it wasn't supposed to be a great match. It was supposed to be every heel trick in the book.
Yeah, exactly. It was them just jacking themselves off, pretty much. And I have no interest. I have no interest in those style of matches.
So the next one is Naito, Hiromu, and Bushi against Tomoki Honma, Sho, and Master Wato. Maybe Wato gets his big win here in the six-man match.
I hope that they split and the feud continues. that's what we need.
Be wonderful. Then Okada and Toriano against Evil and Dick Togo. I have no interest in that whatsoever.
We just saw the same crap on the show we talked about.
Yeah. Never Openweight six-man title. The match we already talked about. Chaos against the Bullet Club. Is the Bullet Club winning?
Again, I think it's going to depend on the tag title match ultimately. But like you said, they could do a double shot title. I mean, it's the six-man titles. It's like, and the tag titles. Anyway, like, none of those belts matter. So, like, who really cares? I don't think the Jay and the Gorillas, I don't think are a good fit as a team, to be honest. I think Jay in a six-man position, it's still hard for me to believe that they would slot him so low. You know, like, historically, they've always pushed him strong. No matter, against my wishes many times, but they've always been strong with him. And I just, it's hard to see that happening. Like, he gets slotted into this position. I don't know. I think that's kind of tough.
It's a good point, actually. I'm just looking something up in Okada's profile right now. Wait a sec. Yeah. The guys that they have slotted in main positions never win a tag team title. Okada has not won a tag team title. Oh, yes, of course, Tanahashi and Ibushi have won tag team titles, but that's a different story, basically. The guys that they have brought back recently, they really don't do these kind of runs with the tag team titles or with the six-man tag team titles. So maybe that's a clue that Chaos will just defend the title.
And like I said, I think it's very possible they start some kind of turn on Jay here, even though, like I said, it might not matter.
The easiest way to do it would be Ishii just beating White again.
Well, that would be great. You could have, like, oh, man, you lost our title, or something like that. Yeah, have Jay take the fall. Mm-hmm. That would be great. I also think it's possible, you know, they could set something up where, hey, the Gorillas win the tag titles, and then, you know, somebody pins one of them, and they challenge for a tag title shot as well.
Sure.
They could set that up later on. But I think the best, like you said, if the goal is to set up a turn, I think beating Jay, the more I think about it, the more I think the Chaos team's actually going to win. All of these storylines feel like the Chaos should win.
And on top of that, we know that this Chaos team in six-man tag team titles, this is usually the moment for Yoshi-Ashi to shine.
That's true. I think if he pinned Jay, that would actually be the best outcome.
Oh, yeah, right.
for the story. Like, because that would give them a reason.
He lost Yoshi-Ashi.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they could be like, what the? Like, you lost to him? You know? And they could easily set that up. Like, in the New Japan Cup, they could have Yoshi versus Jay, and mm-hmm. Jay could just win back. And, like, I think Chaos is going to win.
Yeah.
And they should win, because they're such a great team. Like, they really are. They like, all three of them. I love these guys, and they made those titles mean so much more. Like, to me, this match is way better on paper than the tag title match.
Oh, man. So much better.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. Yep. We have one match left for the double title. Kota Ibushi against Sanada. That.
Sorry. I haven't heard anything about it in a month.
No, me neither. They have been in matches against one another. They've done some exchanges here and there, but nothing has screamed title match to me. Yeah, it's Kota Ibushi and Sanada. What you going to say? It's the rematch of the G1 Climax final that was a match that got a lot of praise and got a lot of criticism at the same time, and I'm going to think that's going to be the same for this one.
Yeah, you know, I thought it was all right. You know, when Sanada got his near fall in that match, the crowd popped huge, relatively speaking, obviously. I don't know if that's going to happen this time. You know, whenever they do that spot, and I think he's such a cool challenger that it's really dragged the whole tour down, almost. Like, because the main match at the end of the day is such a dud that it's really tough to get excited about anything going on. So I'm just glad that it's going to be over with soon and we can move on to someone else, because Sanada is just it's not been a very successful start to this year. And it feels like he's somebody that would be a big project for New Japan, considering how they've elevated him steadily over the years, slowly but steadily. But it just feels like right now he's in the same spot he's always been in. New beginning challenger that is in a really lame match. That's going to probably have a really lame match at the end of the day. So I feel like that's kind of a tough role for him. And, you know, we didn't really love that Wrestle Kingdom match either, the Sanada and Evil match. Far from it. I think I was being very generous by saying that. But it feels like he's had a real lackluster start to the year.
Yeah, it's a very lackluster start overall, because if you look up and down the card, there is not really any program that is that can be described as a hot program.
Yeah, the hottest one was the Tenkozy and Empire thing.
Yeah, that's over.
And that's over with, exactly, yeah. The only thing we have left is Naito and Honma. And, I mean, that's not what we would have predicted a few months ago, that would be the best feud in the company.
No.
We wouldn't have wanted to predict it. I don't think. But regardless, that's the situation we're in now. And, you know, the best thing is that if Ibushi wins, it throws that IC title in the trash where it belongs. I'll be very happy if that happens. That's the only good part of this feud.
Yeah, that was my next point. When are they finally going to do that one championship that Kota Ibushi is always talking about?
Well, he brings it up every promo, it feels like. So I don't know why they... I mean, you would think if he wins it here, they could say, I've unified the titles, I've become God, and God only has one title, or something like that. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe they'll do the anniversary show.
That would make a lot of sense. And Hiromu versus Kota Ibushi, that's a great match to put together. Like, that's way hotter than Sanada and Ibushi, even in a non-title format. I think that's way more interesting.
Absolutely. But did you know that they have a double shot in Osaka Joe Hall coming up before the anniversary show?
maybe Shingo could challenge for the title there if they don't want him to win the New Japan Cup.
Man, double shot. February 27 and 28, double shot in Osaka. They'll need some main events, some hot main events for those two shows.
I mean, that's honestly, now you say that, I really think that that could be an idea. Like, if they don't want Shingo to win the New Japan Cup, that would kind of combine both of my theories, that they think Tanahashi's a bigger star than Shingo, and that you lose and you get elevated anyway in New Japan. So both of those things could be true.
Yeah, so one main event will probably be Tanahashi at Great Okan, right?
Absolutely, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and then the other one, Kota Ibushi versus maybe Shingo.
I hope so. Like, that would be really cool. Maybe it'll be Naito and Honma in a main event match. Mm-hmm.
Shingo Takagi isn't even on these cards, but there's still the Roach to Castle attack. So there's room to
do a program. Yeah, not on these cards either.
Yeah, it's true. Right. Yeah.
I think they got like the Empire's not. I think they settled their stories, and now this is like a different thing.
It is. Yes.
Yeah.
And it's not bad. It's not bad. Not everyone has to be on every card.
No, I think it's a lot better that they're doing these five match shows instead of trying to
and that is why that is why I really enjoyed this new beginning in Nagoya card so much, because it was a show that had three singles matches that were completely different from one another and that completely accomplished what they wanted to without the interference bullshit that they have done for the majority of the second half of last year. And it was just a nice time to sit down and watch a New Japan card again that delivered in a great main event. That's not... I don't ask for much. I just asked for this.
See, New Japan's bringing us around with main events like that. If Tanahashi's still a champion, then I'll definitely come around. Yeah, but you know, yeah, I completely agree with you. Like you said, I didn't even love that Okan match that much. I mean, I thought it was fine. I didn't hate it like Meltzer or whatever, but I thought it was a solid match. But the main thing is that it advanced the story. It was a good win for a young guy, and it accomplished everything it wanted. And I thought the semi-main and the main event were really good and super great, respectively. So I think that show was really good. I completely agree with you.
So that's basically it on New Japan Pro Wrestling. The cards are coming up this week. There is another big show that is coming up on the weekend from Dramatic Dream Team. They are doing Kawasaki Strong 2021 on February 14 from the Cults Kawasaki. They have an 8-match card lined up here. Mitsuki Watase and Hideki Okatani versus Yusuke Okada and Toi Kojima is the opening match. So then, what's your stand on Okada right now in DDT?
Oh, I think he's awesome. Like, he fits in. That match he had with Ueno was one of the best matches.
Yeah, that was great.
Last month. Yeah. Absolutely. I think the thing is, anywhere he goes, he's such a great talent. No matter where he went, he would make it work. And I think he's a great performer. And I think he's found a way in this Junretsu storyline. I think he fits like a glove. And I think this match will be really good.
Absolutely. Yuki Ino returns to action. It's Damnation versus All Out. Daisuke Sasaki, Soma Takao, Matt Pauly, and Yuji Ino against Konosuke Takeshita, Akito, Shunma Katsumata, and Yuki Ino. Great that he is back. Looking at this match, I remember that they did a Chris Brooks produced show on the weekend, and they had Konosuke Takeshita versus Bali and Aki in a match, and I can't wait to watch that match, actually.
Yeah, that should be interesting. How do you think Hino's done in DDT so far?
I think he's done a good job. He's not been in the center of attention so far, but the matches that he has done, he wasn't impressive, but I think he delivered.
Yeah, I think he wasn't used in a way that he would succeed. I think he needs to face the smaller guys, because him against, you know, him with Mad Pauly, I don't think is the best use of him. But I think
he needs
put him
to, needs to throw around guys like Shuma Katsumata.
Exactly, that was his best run. You know, it's like his singles matches so far have been Okatani, the young guy, okay, cool, and Yuki Onaya, which is another guy that he's kind of not his best fit with. So if they put him against Hiroshima or Shunma or Chris Brooks even, I think would be better. Or even Okada, if they could work that into something, I think would be great. But I'm hopeful to see that in the future.
It feels like that he has been brought in because, of course, he all of a sudden left 0-1, and they decided, well, Yuji Hino, great wrestler, we'll bring him in. He's not in a position right now where he could shine already, but there will be definitely programs where he can.
Yeah, and with Okada, he has the benefit of having a built-in story with Akiyama, and Hino doesn't have that.
Exactly. So, third match, Super Ayoshi War, Blooming Flowers, Saki Akai and Maya Yuki against Saori Ano and Miyako Matsumoto. Ice Ribbon produce here.
somewhat so, yeah. plus Saki in there, and Miyako, she was a long-time Ice Ribbon wrestler. Should be a lot of fun. I think Yuki and Ano will bring the great work rate, and Miyako and Akai will get over with the DT audience with comedy and hijinks.
Yeah, it was a good angle when Saki Akai announced that Maya would be her partner. I think it was at the end of January on the Kurokan Hall show where they did it. So yeah, this one should be good. Saori Ano is really, really good.
Yeah, big fan of both her and Yuki. I think both are really strong. And Akai's really improved. Miyako, great kind of underdog wrestler, comedic style wrestler. Should be a good match, I think.
Should be. Special six-man tag match is up next. Super Delphin, Chris Brooks, and Maki Ito. What a trio.
Why Delphin?
I was just going to say Osaka, but it's not Osaka. It's Kawasaki. No idea.
No idea. That's the only explanation.
But I know that the team against Mao, Keigo Nakamura, and Mirai Mayumi. What a match that is.
It's unique. I will say that for sure. This could be crazy, and like I said, it's interesting, but who knows how it'll turn out. Just a weird mix of names.
Yes. Moving on, special tag match, Harashima and Yuji Okabayashi, the winners of the New Year's Eve tag tournament, against Katsusada Higuchi and Yukio Naya. I'm pretty sure that this match is designed to put over Yukio Naya in defeat.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't do it against Okabayashi, then you have some issues, I would
say.
He
has improved.
Yeah, like maybe they'll do something good here. I've really put over Hiroshima a lot lately. I've really been impressed with a lot of his work in general. I think he's, he's somewhat like similar to the Tanahashi of DDT, where he's kind of in the background and kind of gets written off sometimes, but whenever he gets the shot to do something big, he always delivers. And Okabayashi is like one of the best wrestlers ever, I feel like. So having them as a team is great.
We should really make a case for this guy, that he's because he's incredible. He brings his energy so incredible to see every time he's in the ring. And he'll bring it here. Yukio Naya, we've talked about him when Mark Pickering was on the show. And the Yukio Naya that he was talking about from the Real Japan days is a far cry from where Yukio Naya is now. It seems like being able to wrestle steadily suddenly makes you a better wrestler. Crazy.
An incredible deduction. You only hear it on this show, people.
So, the KOD 10-man tag team title is now a KOD 8-man tag team title. Sanshiro Takagi, Dancho Kodino, and Toru Owashi and Makoto Oishi go against Shinya Aoki, Super Sasadango Machine, Antonio Honda, and Katsuki Hirata. Well, what a match.
It will be complete insanity, like with every person involved. Too bad for Oishi, because I think he's shown a lot of great work, actually.
Yeah, this new knee lock that he has is great.
Yeah, Fujiyama knee lock.
Right.
You know, I don't know. Like, he's kind of, I would like to see him in something better than this. And Aoki, obviously, as well. But it seems like in DDT, he always does crazy stuff anyway. So,
yeah.
Otherwise, all goofy comedic people.
Absolutely. Two title matches top this card for the Universal title. It's Yuki Ueno defending it against Yukio Sakaguchi. The preludes that they've done in tag matches have been really, really strong. For whatever reason, the styles that they have, they add to one another perfectly. Yuki Sakaguchi goes to more of a submission-based style, while Yuki Ueno in the last couple of months has been doing more of an indie super type of match. But now he has somewhat toned that down and wrestled more in a Yukio Sakaguchi direction, and I think that they have very good chemistry.
Should be a great match, I feel. Yes. Like, I totally agree with everything you said, and I think Ueno has really solidified himself as one of the top in-ring performers in the company. He's one of my favorite people to watch, no matter who he's facing. And like I mentioned earlier, that match with Okada, if you haven't seen that, I really got to advise everyone to check that out because it's really, really great. And I think this match can be just as good as that, if not even better, with the title on the line.
Tetsuya Endo versus Jun Akiyama is the main event of that show. KOD Openweight title on the line. Dylan, is Akiyama winning?
I think it's definitely possible. You know, it logically, it would make sense, actually. So, yeah.
It would actually make sense.
Yeah, I'm going to predict Akiyama wins.
He has been on a strong run in DDT lately. He defeated Konosuke Takeshita. And let's think about that. Akiyama wins the title here, goes on a run. He has defeated Konosuke Takeshita twice. What's the logical endgame of this? Takeshita defeats Akiyama for the title.
Absolutely.
So, in my mind, that makes complete sense. And I would go that route. And for the match itself, we've seen what Akiyama can do with Takeshita. Tetsuya Endo is a very similar wrestler than Takeshita is. And so I expect great things from this match.
Yeah, I mean, stylistically, not really.
No.
Yeah, like they're young. that's what they have in common, but they're not really that similar in how they wrestle. Like, Endo's much more of a high flyer type of guy.
That's true.
But I mean, I still think that this will work, though. it could be similarly good if Akiyama is in the ring with him. And, you know, Endo's a good champion. I think he's a good representative for DDT. So I have no problem with him specifically. But I obviously, as a fan, I think Akiyama adds a great new, you know, a new coat of paint a little bit to the title. Endo, and how long has Endo been champion? He's been champion since June of last year when he beat Tanaka, right?
So that's... Yes. That is one other point why I think that the title reign may be coming to an end.
Yeah. Like, he's had a fine title reign. Akiyama's a much better option. Like, let's move on. I'm ready.
The reason why I said they are similar is because whenever Endo is in a ring with an opponent like Jun Akiyama, like an opponent that's more of a ground-based style, Tetsuya Endo can definitely adjust to that. And he has matches that he has done that have been worked around submission moves. For example, the one against Makoto Oishi in the tournament, in the DDT tournament, where they worked around the Fuji... What's it called? The Fuji...
Fujiyama knee lock.
Fujiyama knee lock, right? And he, of course, also has the modified Yuki... Oh, I'm bad at these names right now. The submission move that he does. Yurikamome, that's it. that he uses. So in that sense, he's a bit similar to Takeshita too, because he has the submissions too that he can work around. And I would make this a trope of the match, definitely.
Yeah, like sometimes he's too indie for my book. Like, that match with Oishi was great, like, but that was really the only time that he's done that successfully. Like, to me, like, there was another match on that tour with Sakaguchi, which didn't work at all, I thought, with Endo. Right. I think so. I don't know. I think that he'll do fine in this match, though. Like I said, he's a good champion for DDT. Great look, like, you know, young guy, good DDT original type of guy. Had a good run with the title. Like I said, he's been the champion for 8 months now, almost. So, you know, I really think he's done a fine job. And when he gets his chance, and, you know, for a long time I thought, too, where it was like, it felt like they kind of, I don't want to say overlooked him, but it felt like they kept moving past him a little bit too much when I thought they would want to build him up a little bit more to be that main eventer. But they finally did it, and I think it's been successful. So you have to give him credit for that, even though, like I said, personally, he's not my tip-top favorite, but I think he's done a good job as well.
Yeah, for a long time it seemed that they had made their decision that Takeshita was the guy, and that Tetsuya Endo would play second fiddle. That's what it seemed for a long time. But now it seems like they are just basically interchanging. Whenever they feel like that Endo has to be on top, Endo's on top, and Takeshita does different things, and vice versa.
For a long time, he was even second fiddle to Sasaki in his own group as well. So it's like, that's what I was saying. Like, it felt like they really passed him over a lot. But now I think that they've elevated him to the status where he's on the Takeshita level.
Yeah, they did. So that is what I have for DT.
Should be a good show.
Yeah, should be a good show. I'm looking forward to that. Moving on to Dragon Gate. They had their Truth Gate tour kicked off this past Friday in Kurken Hall, and it ended with a new unit being formed. Yamato and Dragon Kid, they have come together because of their hatred of RED. Yamato, of course, because Kai has turned on him, and Dragon Kid because RED beat Team Toriumon and he was the one fighting the hardest. He lost his mask in the match, and that is why he wants to end RED, much like Yamato does. So they got together to be a tag team, but they couldn't fight off RED because the numbers were so high of RED that Dragon Kid and Yamato couldn't fight against them. So they got two new allies by their side in Benkei and Keisuke Okuda, who also want RED to end. And now we have a new group that doesn't have a name yet, but it's Yamato, Dragon Kid, Benkei, and Keisuke Okuda. What do you say?
Sounds like a pretty great group to me. Yeah. I think all those guys are various levels of pretty good to really great. And so I'm really happy to see them come together. I think they're a good group. I do think it'll be interesting to see how this is going to play out with Benkei, as for a long time it felt like he was the next ace of the company, and now even in this group it feels like he's not necessarily the leader. So I think that's kind of an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, they have definitely rewound a bit on his big push. Even I thought about it too when he came out here. He, besides Keisuke Okuda, he just looked like a guy.
Yeah.
And not like the guy. And I'm wondering what happened there. Because, as you said, for a couple of months, he was on top of the world for Dragon Gate.
And he did good. Like, he's good. Like, I always go back to that. When he lost the title, I know it was for a bigger storyline, but I really think that they made a kind of a mistake by taking the title off of him so soon. It's like, Doi did fine, and I get that it was for the Toriumon generation and all that storyline. But to me, I really think that they undercut him kind of. And it's a shame, because I think he's got a lot of talent. I'm a big fan of Benkei. I think he's one of the best guys on the roster. Obviously, I think Okuda is just a great, great wrestler. And somebody, Dragon Kid, of all the veterans, I think Dragon Kid is like my favorite of the older guys, the 40-year-old plus. I think he's probably the one I most enjoy watching from show to show. And even when he was trying to audition for Natural Vibes, when he was hitting that rowboat move, that's a legendary moment, I feel like.
Onto the topic of Natural Vibes, Dylan. So Susumu Yokosuka still looks completely lost when he has to do the dance. And the storyline has to be that at one point, Susumu Yokosuka just turns heel on KZ and just says, I'm done with this. I'm fed up. I can't do this anymore. It hurts when you watch it, Dylan. It hurts.
I can relate, because I'd feel the same way as him, to be honest. If I were to join Natural Vibes, I'd be like, please get me out of this group.
Yeah, if they had asked me to do the same dance, I would look completely lost too.
And I'd just be so annoyed by it. I think that would be the problem. Like, I don't want to be with this group. This group sucks. Like, this group sucked the first time. Like, why would it be even better now?
I don't know, man.
Why am I involved in this? That would be what I was thinking if I was Susumu. I'd be like, man, I was All Japan Junior Champion last year, and now I'm doing this crap.
Again, man.
Yeah, again. Yeah, again. I hated again. It the first time.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
he hated it the first time. So that kind of doesn't make a lot of sense, actually. Like, why is he even involved in this if he hates it so much? Especially this time.
Because it's like, friends with Horiguchi, and he likes it so much.
Okay. I guess so. I guess you can't argue against Genki.
Yeah. On the topic of Benkei, he had the title match against Shun Skywalker in December, but at the same time, he was the first challenger for Skywalker. And I don't know where he's heading right now. Keisuke Okuda has opened the Brave Gate title. It seems that Yamato and Dragon Kid are being paired up to be a tag team. I can see them being the team that takes off the Twin Gate title from Hulk and Kai. Mm-hmm. So what's Benkei going to do?
He's going to wrestle in six-man matches, like, pretty much. Because it doesn't feel like he's anywhere near the title. He already had a title shot at the end of the day.
Yes.
If Okuda loses the title, Benkei could try to avenge him in a match. But I mean, that's not the best role, I would say.
Oh, I don't think that he can, because he may not make the weight limit.
Yeah, you might be right. You might be right. He's like one of the few heavyweights in Dragon Gate.
Yeah, the
So.
weight limit is somewhat of 82 kilogram. Let me see.
He's over 250 pounds.
Yeah, he is over the weight limit, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's not going to be Brave Cage champion.
I guess not. Then I guess I don't know what he's going to do other than challenge for the six, the Triangle Gate titles.
Yeah, Triangle Gate. Okay. Well,
Yeah, your favorite.
they set up matches. The Yamato and Kai match, they are doing the second round of that, as well as Dragon Kid versus SP Kento. These two matches, they really got heated up in the last couple of months and weeks, and both matches are signed for Currican Hall March 4. And I am under the assumption that once again we won't get clean finishes in these matches.
How could you think that, Striga? What gives you that idea? If there's one thing these SP Kento matches are known for, it's pure wrestling with no interferences, no dirty deeds, no shenanigans.
Yes, that's what's happening. But one
And
thing they
maybe
did,
not.
one thing they did is that Dragon Kid has now defeated SP Kento, and I think this was the first pinfall loss that Kento has taken ever since his gimmick change.
Yeah, they've really protected him a lot. Done a great job with both him and Kakuta. I think they've really given them good roles, but good for Dragon Kid. I always have a he's like a guy I always look back on. I'm like, man, how is he never the top champion in this company? But obviously older now, I still really respect his work. So that's a nice little thing for him.
Yeah, there was a point in time where they could have gone that direction, but now that is
Long ago.
probably, oh, yeah, long ago.
Yeah.
Yes, so Yamato and Kai is really a great feud. I think Kai is such an incredible heel in this role that he has. Even at the entrance at this Currican Hall show that they did, he was just lying on the floor of Currican Hall laughing at Yamato while his friends were surrounding him. And Yamato couldn't do anything because the numbers, as I said, of RED are so staggeringly high against the tag team of Kid and him and Yamato. This is a great feud.
Way over exceeded my expectations. Kai as a heel, when he turned, I like his style wrestling is largely babyface. Like his best role in his career is always as a babyface underdog type of guy. And when he turned heel, I was like, like I don't know him and Hulk as a team. I was really down on that. But then every time I watched them wrestle, their matches always overachieve. Like for whatever, and it's largely because of him. It's not because of Hulk, let me tell you. It's largely because of him. I think he's done an incredible job of being a great heel. And in Dragon Gate, I think this is the one company where him as a heel actually totally works because of the size advantage he always has. And in other companies, he wouldn't have that necessarily. So in Dragon Gate, he makes a great heel, and obviously his mannerisms and his charisma are really showing out right now. He's doing a great job. It really seems like he's been supercharged by this turn and the chance to do something different.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. This is a great role that they've put him in.
And he's just a great talent. Like, I really need to emphasize this. He really is an underrated talent. Like, he has done such a great job in every role he's been given over the last few years. And I think, again, this is even I doubted him. And I think that he totally proved me wrong. And I shouldn't have done that. I should have just believed in him because he's a really tremendous talent. One of the best in the company, in my opinion, overall.
Yeah, he is. He really is. He's great. Kai is great. So, two other matches scheduled for Champion Gate in Osaka on March 7. First Twin Gate Championship, BB Hulk and Kai defend against Masaki Mochizuki and Takashi Yoshida. Yoshida was thrown out from RED and has basically he got asylum by Masaki Mochizuki. He has taken him in. Nobody wanted to anything to do with Takashi Yoshida. And now he's teaming with his senpai again. Yeah. What a match.
The promo that set their team up was really amusing.
It was amazing.
Yeah, basically Mochizuki was like or he called him out, he was like senpai, and then he was like, did you see what just happened? Did you see my match? And Mochizuki was like, I don't watch your matches. Like, no, I didn't see it. And I was like, wow, like, I can't disagree with Mochizuki here. But yeah, it was a very funny little setup they had there. I think he even said something too that was like, why are you calling me that? You're like, you've been in this business for 20 years almost or something. Like, why are you acting this way? So I think that's very funny.
It's very very amusing storyline. They won this tournament in late January that made them number one contenders, and now they are facing Bibialk and Kai. But as I said, probably just a transitional title defense before Yamato and Dragon Kid get a title shot.
Yeah, completely agree.
So that's it. For the Dreamgate, Shun Skywalker defense against Kaito Ishida. What do you think about that?
I just want to say, on the Corcoran Hall show, they just had the Truthgate show. Ishida and Jason Lee had a great sequence in their match. Like, there was a trios match, and I thought those guys were just awesome together. It was Shun, Kota Minora, Jason Lee, and La Estrella. They took on Ishida, Kazuma, Diamante, and Hip Hop Kakuta, and I thought Ishida and Lee was like the highlight of that match. I really advise people to check that out. Great, great sequence between those two.
Masquerade is the hottest group in Japanese pro wrestling right now.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they've got a great look, great gimmick, really elevated everybody. Great group. I totally agree with you.
Everything about them is kick ass.
Yeah, totally. So it set up this title match with Shun and Ishida. Ishida is one of my personal favorites in the company as well. I do still think that Skywalker, I think it's a little soon for him. I don't think he's at that tip-top tier yet, but I do think that the group has totally helped alleviate some of those concerns, because him as the leader, him as the champion, I think is really well done. It's clear that they have a lot of great plans for him going forward, and I think this is going to be a great match. Hopefully they keep a lot of, like, it's a Dragon Gate main event match and it's an RED match, so you know there's going to be some craziness going on, and that's what kind of holds it back for me. But Ishii does a great talent, so when they do get the opportunity to wrestle, I think they'll do a great job.
I had a brief exchange today on Twitter with Rob, who isn't down with Ishida as a challenger because, well, Ishida, he hasn't done a lot since losing the Bravegate title to Okuda. He has lost a lot of matches in December, and they only have started to heat him back up recently with this new group, Masquerade, appearing. But now he has defeated Jason Lee and Kota Minoura on one day in separate matches, which kind of gives him a reason to challenge for the title against Shun Skywalker now. But Rob's point more so was that him challenging is a bit premature too, much like maybe Shun Skywalker being the champion. So Rob's idea was that, I'm just reading this here, he's fresh and unexpected challenger. I'd rather it end in a DQ or something unclean to keep that story going rather than he loses and that's the end. I think that's a good idea too.
Maybe it will. Like I said, it's an RED match. You never know on there. But yeah, like lately they tried to heat him up. It's a very traditional. To me, he's not that. I get where he's coming from too, because at the end of the day, if he just loses, then it feels like he's just a really unimportant challenger, somewhat similar to the tag titles. I don't know. Like I really like Kaito Ishida. And I think that he's going to have a great run.
And then again, as you said, it's traditional booking. The guy loses that one title and then gets a chance to move further up the card. And Ishida is a guy they should really focus on because young talent, great look, great guy.
I don't know if that's traditional in Japanese wrestling, just New Japan usually, but they've done it again in Dragon Gate.
Yes.
Yeah, Dragon Gate has said, what a brilliant idea. So, and I think it should be a great match.
Absolutely. On the topics of traditions, Dylan, following the traditions of Okinawa Pro Wrestling and Osaka Pro Wrestling, the Bodyguard has brought another company to life in the year 2021 in Koliga Pro Wrestling. And Osaka Pro, for a long time, they've been running shows every day in the former Delphin Arena in Osaka. And the approach of Koliga Pro Wrestling, the group that the Bodyguard owns now, is that they run 6 times a week. And they are streaming each of their shows on YouTube. And I want to ask you this, Dylan. Is this pro wrestling?
It is, technically. I don't know what else you would call it.
So we talked about this when we talked about the topics of this show. You only watched the first show of Koliga Pro, which was a viewing an experience in and of its own because they had no sound and you were basically watching the matches on mute, which was unique. But now they have sound. They don't have commentary, but they have sound. And the setup, the look of Collega Pro, it looks great. They have this giant video wall where they have videos playing for every wrestler. It's not like they have in-match clips or anything. It's just artwork for the wrestlers that they have on the throne. They have this Collega studio set up with a lot of chairs, but obviously during the pandemic there can't be a lot of fans there, so it's basically a couple of dozen fans every show, I'd say. And the great thing about Collega Pro is that it gives steady work to guys that really need that right now, because look at these guys. Ryuji Sai, not really used by All Japan Pro Wrestling. The Strong Hearts. OWE is it's gone, basically. OWE in China, they are now concentrating on doing more of the Kung Fu theater route, I've seen recently. I've seen some posters for. So they are in Osaka. They don't have really anything going on for them except for their their parts in different companies that they wrestle for. But here they are. Then they have guys from... they have this Yasutaka Osera guy from Michinoku Pro coming in. They have the Osaka Pro guys like Billy Ken Kidd, Tsubasa, Ultimate Spider Jr., Takuya Kida wrestling on these shows. And that is the greatest part of Collega Pro, that the bodyguard is providing work for his friends to be on shows every single day.
I mean, I can't argue with anything you said. Exactly right. It's always good for some under-the-radar talent and just talent in general to have a place to work. And like you said, every single day, it gives them opportunity to work, obviously, but also just a little bit of spotlight on YouTube every day. That's something, too. You know, like, let these guys keep going, keep yourself fresh, and give yourself a little bit of a spotlight. You know, some of these guys like Tsubasa, Ultimate Spider Jr., they wouldn't appear on tape very much, but now you have an opportunity to see them on this Collega Pro.
A lot of it is
every day.
A lot of it is very goofy. So, for example, the first show, Gainer turned against the bodyguard, and Gainer is now with the group of Ryuji Sai, and they are cheating in every single match, which makes Collega Pro somewhat of a heel heat promotion too. And this Sodai Monji guy that is in this group too from Land's End, I described that to you the other day.
Yes.
He, as a foreign object, he uses this sign that you'd set up when there is a wet floor. That is his foreign object that he uses in the matches. And for the most part, it backfires and he loses the match. And on some shows, they go over the top and have three matches that go in the same direction where the heel uses some nefarious means and it backfires on him and the other guys, the faces, win the matches. So from this promotion, you really have to pick and choose what you watch. For example, one match I want to mention is from January 26th, Alejandro and Ultimate Spider Jr. against Shima and Shigeyori Irie. Very good tag match. Another match that I recently saw was El Lindemann versus Yasutaka Osera from the February 4 show. It was in the main event, actually, of that show. And the show that you also saw, Dylan, the one from February 6th, I thought that was one of the better ones that they have done recently, with Naoki Tanisaki and Yasutaka Osera against El Lindemann and T-Hawk in the semi-main. I really thought there was a good match, too.
Yeah, I watched the whole show, actually. I made the return after the first show. I was just like, you know. I had a lot going on, honestly. But even still, I was kind of like, okay, this is an indie project, and whatever. But so then we came to this show, and you brought me back in, Striga.
I did.
I could not resist you. And I have to say, I do want to mention that you said exactly what I noted off of my notes right away. I like the big screen setup they have. It reminds me of a lot of the old K-Dojo shows back in the day. They used to have a screen, too, and I thought that made them stand out and look a little bit more major league, so to speak. This was Saturday Night Rising Stars. You know it was a big show because it had a name on there. But yeah, so you had a couple matches on here. First of all, Dory Funk Jr. is heavily featured. And he kicked off the show, actually, with a video promo from his Bang School, putting over Bodyguard and Kalika Pro. They show a lot of ads, a lot of Bodyguard eating stuff as well on the video screen in between matches. So that's a little bit of an experience if you don't skip forward. But the first match of the show was Shima and Ultimate Spider Jr. And the thing is, watching the show, like really the whole show, it kind of wrapped up in one thing that I noticed. I don't want to say low effort is happening here, but they're not going all out. Like, let's just say here. It's not a full speed type of show. This is a very relaxed atmosphere. You know, it's not that serious at the end of the day. Like you said, it's kind of goofy, but they do some good things here and there. I think the tag match you mentioned was the one out of the whole show that got the crowd into it the most.
And you know why that is? Because Linda Man is always putting his working boots on.
That's what we're saying. Like, those guys, the Strong Hearts guys, they never take. Well, Shima did. Like, so their first match, that's exactly what I noted. I was like, well, this is really a laid-back type of match.
But he still did the Meteora in that match, though.
Oh, I love that finish, too, where Ultimate Spider kindly scooted ahead a little bit. So he allowed Shima to hit the Meteora on him. So it was very nice of Spider to do that. But yeah, like, the Strong Hearts in the tag match, I thought worked really hard. The crowd was getting into it. Naoki Tanizaki did some good things. I liked Tanizaki's entrance music as well. I noted in my notes. They had a good little finishing stretch here where he was looking for the implant, but T-Hawk ended up drop-kicking him to let Lindemann get a sunset flip, and then Osera hit a drop-kick right away to let Tanizaki reverse it into his own pin.
I thought it was a great finish. Very creative.
I liked it. Yeah, it was really well done, especially Osera's part where he came in with a drop-kick. I thought it was kind of silly for T-Hawk to just roll out after that. it was a nice idea.
Great timing on the dropkick.
Yeah, the dropkick was really good, too. Yeah, these young guys look pretty good, some of these guys they have on here, I thought, actually. So it wasn't a bad watch, all things considered, for an indie show. Just kind of know what you're getting into would be my advice. Yeah, exactly. You know,
they are not
working
it out of the park. Specifically, the weekday shows, they are just working very mildly paced. Yeah, you have to pick and choose, as I said.
I thought Onitsuka impressed me in his match versus Takeo Ikeda, where he got the crowd into it. He showed a good grasp of how to work in that kind of dry environment. I mean, there's 15 people in here, but I liked how he was able to get it in. I think a secret to working these shows is slap guys really hard to where it makes a lot of noise, and the crowd will pop. Because that's something that really got over, although the finish was really goofy.
I wanted to put over the finish because I got a laugh out of that.
Okay,
because
fine.
The finish was... Taku Yakida put the referee in between him and Onitsuka. Then he kicked Onitsuka in the ass, which caused the ref to DDT Onitsuka, and then he pinned him.
Great finish.
Great finish, yes.
For this company, yes, it was very amusing there. But
One major criticism that I've seen on Twitter is that the Bodyguard has brought in Dillon James too. Recently, has come to the attention of a lot of people online that Dillon James was fired from 01 for the reason that he has tried to bring a Japanese woman to Australia without the consent of her parents, and apparently that is a strong no-go in Japanese society.
Oh, that's not good. Yeah, but I knew about that. That's why he's been disappeared from All Japan for all this time. If you notice, he looks a lot smaller than he did in the past.
He does really, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what's been going on with him in his personal life, but Bodyguard brought him in here. He's in the main event of that show I watched, too. Like I said, I noticed that, too. I was like, man, he looks a lot smaller than he did in All Japan. But it's kind of crazy if you think about it. What was that, like 2-3 years ago?
Yeah,
now?
Much less impressive.
Yeah. Well, obviously, his look is not nearly.
Remember this match that he had in April 2019 with Yuji Kobayashi? That was one of the best matches of the first half of 2019.
Yeah, it really was. That was probably his best match of his whole career.
Yep.
But yeah, their match. I noted too in their match that I noted Bodyguard gets a superstar entrance. Like
the entrance
3 seconds
is
of smoke.
Incredible.
Yeah, he has, and it's like 3 seconds of smoke pillars rise up when he stands in there. So yes, you were very impressed by the entrance there. But yeah, I noticed like James immediately. I was like, man, he looks way smaller than he used to. And the crowd enjoyed whenever they chopped hard. They went to the corner. They yelled. That's another thing Dillon James did in this match. His idea to get over was like yell a lot whenever he was about to hit a move. He'd scream out. There was interference, of course, and it led to a Gane spear. James ended up choke slamming Gane for the win. And Caliga Pro vanquishes Land's End for now, and we'll see. Because
Wow.
like, yeah, a lot of the fans that were really into this, it feels like it is already kind of like dropping off a little bit, to
It
be
is.
honest with you.
It is really. The hype that it got early on is definitely vanishing. I can see it on my Twitter that in the first week, a lot of people talked about it. Now, as you said, the hype has dropped off noticeably. And the question that I have is, how sustainable is this project?
It's sustainable as long as Bodyguard gets money to run these shows.
That's the
I would
point
say,
here.
yes, exactly. But yeah, you know, I did notice too. If you notice on the YouTube videos, the directions they give to the arena is in English and not Japanese.
Oh,
Did
interesting.
you notice that?
Oh.
I'm not making this up, Stringer. Look, like look
Tr
it
I
up right
trust
now.
you. I Why would I trust you?
it's all a lie. No, but I'm like. No, but like for real, I can tell you what it says right now. I'm going to click on the video again, and we're going to see exactly what. I'm going to give everyone the directions to this building here. And you don't need Google Maps, you have Eastern Lariat. Okay, so here we go.
Oh, there it is. Yes.
Yeah, Caliga Pro is being held at Caliga Studio from every Monday through Saturday. Caliga Studio, 3134, Oiraki, Fukushima-ku, Osaka-shi, Osaka, Japan.
By the way, I love
Six
that they
minutes.
rest on Sundays.
Yeah, we have to. We had. That's the day of the Lord, Stringer.
Yes.
We need to. Bodyguard is a very spiritual guy. I don't know if you
He
knew
is.
this or not.
Yes.
Yes. So yes, 6 minutes walk from Yonagawa Station, Hanshin Main Line. 8 minutes walk from Noda Station, Hanshin Main Line. 8 minutes walk from Ebi Station, Japan Railway, and a 10 minutes walk from JR Noda Station. Japan Railway Loop Line. All in English. Those are the directions. How do you like that?
Well, if you can get into the country and quarantine for 2 weeks, you can go to Caliga Pro Wrestling.
Why do you think that it's like that on there?
I
Get it.
think it's like that because they have this approach to being a company that is that has an approach to reach fans outside of Japan, and that's why they are using the English language there. I
Nothing.
wouldn't read too much into it.
Yeah, I guess you're right. There's even some in Japanese
Yeah.
above it as well. So yeah, like I thought that was interesting. I was like, why even go to that length?
I don't know,
Even
man.
like who does he think is coming to these shows? I wonder,
Maybe the
but,
bodyguard just thinks it's cool when you have it in English there too.
that's true. I mean, it is kind of cool. It'd be like, you know, in American society, if you had something in Japanese, that's
Yeah,
kind of cool.
it
You
is.
know, so I can get behind that. You know, the Bodyguard, he's up to craziness with his Caliga Pro promotion. Like you said, the best part of it is that these guys are getting work, and like I personally appreciate the opportunity to see some of these Opro guys, or like
Yeah.
just Osaka guys in general, because like I said at the start, you wouldn't get a chance to see guys like Ultimate Spider Jr. very much, but now you have an opportunity every day of the week, and it's not gonna tug at my heartstrings or anything like that, or get me super emotionally invested, but. Every now and then, it's nice that the option's there as a fan. That hey, if I've got nothing going on in the middle of the week and I see a match that looks promising, I'll give it a shot.
Absolutely, and I think that's a great tool that a lot of Japanese promotions have used recently. We've talked about Kyushu Pro Wrestling. They put some of their matches on YouTube too. Most of their matches, actually, from the shows that they run monthly. Quiet Storm actually is going to challenge for the Kyushu Pro title next in March, and Michinoku Pro also has started to put up their Dojo Pro Wrestling shows on their YouTube channel. So if you want to go into that direction, you can also watch some Dojo wrestling from Michinoku Pro, and I'm definitely going to do that because they
Yeah, I will too.
had a match with Minoru Fujita and Koji Kawamura on this past weekend, and I'm definitely going to check that out.
Absolutely. They have a lot of good talent in Impro, and I would love to see what they're up to.
Yes. don't expect too much because it's a very tiny dojo and the camera angle is very weird because they film it from on top of one of the turnbuckles. And sometimes when they go onto the mat, you can't really see what move they're doing at the moment. And when they do outside brawls, you can't see anything either. But it's still nice to see some Ichinoku Pro.
Maybe to the untrained eye, such as yourself, Strayer. But for me, I have no doubt that I'll be able to see every technicality in this match from whatever goofy camera angle they put together in there. But no, just to see them is a nice little thing, because you won't get the opportunity otherwise, besides these little YouTube shows.
Absolutely. So, that's my topics. Anything else, Dylan?
Yeah, one more thing. Not necessarily a topic, but I want to mention this before we get out of here. I recently was on WH Park's show, The Long That's and right. Winding Royal Road, and this was a huge show we did, much like this one that me and you were doing. But this show that me and him did was all about the career and life of Toshiaki Kawada, one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. And I've been watching a lot of his matches. If you're on the Patreon, you know I always do the 90s project, and not surprisingly, he's a big part of that. Like, a lot of his matches show up on those countdowns. And I really went in-depth on a lot of things that you might not even know. I've got a bunch of comments that are like, man, I learned stuff I didn't even know about him. Because I was doing a lot of research, some heavy-duty stuff on some of the things. And there's some stories you're not going to hear anywhere else about Kawada, his life, his feelings, what happened, his political strife that he faced in All Japan at times. That stuff is really interesting to me, but also, obviously, there's a ton of great matches he was in. I think this is not, that's not breaking news, but we talk about a lot of them. And actually, I really want to thank Post Wrestling a lot, because they just today, like while we were recording this show, actually, they sent a message with us, and they actually have, and I'm retweeting this on my profile right now. They have an entire playlist of all of Kawada's, some of his best matches that are on YouTube. Yeah, easy to see for everyone. Tons of matches. There's like a dozen posts they made. So really have a lot of love for John Pollock, Wei Ting, and of course WH Park, one of my best friends. So I love doing the show, and a lot of people said a lot of nice things too. And that's something I have to say, being on a show like that, I was a little bit more nervous than I usually am, because the first edition of that show was WH and Hisame, who I've done shows with too. I have a lot of love for her. She's a great resource, and they did it about Misawa, and her episode was so good. So I want my episode to be just as good. I highly advise everyone to listen to her episode as well, but listen to mine. I think you're going to learn a lot, and it was a ton of fun to do, and just an honor for me to talk about a legendary character and wrestler in my life, somebody that really got me into Japanese wrestling in the first place. So please check that out, Long and Winding Royal Road on Post Wrestling, and I'll probably repost it a bunch on my Twitter as well, so it'll be easy to find.
Since I'm working from home still here in Germany, I'll have some time to listen to both the Misawa and the Kawada episodes next week. That's definitely something I'll do. So check out Dylan on Post Wrestling. I've retweeted it too with the Eastern Lariat account. If you give us a follow, twitter.com/EasternLariat, you'll see the Post Wrestling retweet there too. Otherwise, of course, Dylan has a lot up on our Patreon at patreon.com/EasternLariat too. And it sounds like you want to add something else, too?
Yeah, I just wanted to say one more thing. I want to mention it now. I've already started the hype for it. But March Madness is returning on our Twitter this year. I've made the brackets. I've had to edit it a bunch of times with Jay White coming back and forth. But otherwise, the brackets are done. Heavyweight, junior heavyweight, and Joshi brackets are all set up. The Joshi one was really hard because there's so many talents. It's like there's agonizing cuts to make. The other ones, it's like, but this time I'm really excited for this year because it's much more, I don't know the word how to describe this properly, maybe streamlined, but it's really good because we'll just be able to take it from 2020 to this year instead of just like a random, vote for whoever you like best or whatever. Now it's a little bit more centralized into the past year. So I'm going to be doing some shows. I got some people set up to do some shows, and I'm really excited about it. It's going to be a lot of fun and a lot of work for me, but very rewarding as well. So check out Eastern Lariat on Twitter, at Eastern Lariat. It's going to be a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun with it last year in March Madness. Thankfully, I will say, as crazy as the world is, we kind of started the show off on a bleak note with the COVID stuff, but definitely this year will be better than last year in terms of the actual real life wrestling, because at that time, March last year, there was nothing going on. And like March Madness was like the only thing going on, it felt like, in Japanese wrestling at that time, and Big Japan shows. But lots of good stuff. New brackets, new rankings. It's going to be a lot different than last year. Hell, one of our winners, Mako Satomura, she's gone. She went to the UK. She can't win again. But Tanahashi and Hiromu, the other winners, are back to defend their crown. Will they repeat? What do you think, Stringer? Do you think Hiromu and Tanahashi can repeat in 2021?
I think they can repeat because their popularity is still unparalleled, I think.
That's true. I think if I were to make an early prediction,
I think that Goshi Ozaki has a real shot too.
I think so too. I need to send you the bracket. I haven't even sent you the bracket, but all the ones that I didn't leave out anybody important. It's not like goes off the bracket suddenly. Like, oh crap, I forgot him. But no, I think I'm looking at it right now, and if I were to make a guess, I think that Hiromu will win because I think he's way above a lot of the other juniors.
Yeah.
I'll reveal it now, actually. Breaking news update. The initial top seeds of the March Madness bracket. And I'm going to put up later in the month. Before we even start the official March Madness, we're going to have the play-in matches with the 16 seed, which is totally different. But the March Madness for the heavyweights, the number one seeds here. Goshi Ozaki, leading the Misawa region. Kota Ibushi, leading the Toshiaki Kawada region. Hiroshi Tanahashi, he stepped up. He was the number two seed last year, and despite everything, he is now number one in the Kobashi region, and Tetsuya Naito in the Akira Taue region. What a ride that's going to be. In the junior heavyweight bracket, you have number one seed, Hiromu Takahashi, defending his crown. Number one seed, Daisuke Harada, NOAH's current GHC junior champion. Number one seed, Tetsuya Endo of DDT, we talked about him.
Mm-hmm.
And number one seed, El Desperado. Big step up there into the number one.
He had a great year.
He had a really strong year. His match with Hiromu popped way off. Current tag team champion. How I made the brackets was like based off a lot of accomplishments, not necessarily like work rate or anything. So I was trying to have who had, you know, mainstream type of years or big years, and I think Desperado really jumped up and jumped off the page. Joshi regions, you have number one seed, Mayu Iwatani. Again, this year, Mako Satomura is gone, so she won't be in the tournament. She's in the UK. Number one seed, Mayu Iwatani of Stardom. Number one seed, Yuka Sakazaki from Tokyo Joshi Pro. Number one seed, Yoshiko from Seedling. And number one seed, Julia from Stardom as well. So two Stardom
strong number one seeds, yes.
Yeah, so I think all of those are the favorites in each of their particular brackets. I do think that there are people that jump out. The Joshi one is the most wide open. I think any one of those four could win. The junior one, I would predict Hiromu. The heavyweight, I think, is going to be interesting. I agree with your thoughts, actually, that Go has a chance to win. I think Tanahashi's not going to repeat. I think it'll either be Ibushi or Go, personally. It
would be a great match of paper.
That's what I love about this whole concept, is that it ends up with so many crazy matchups that you know that would be nearly impossible or just straight up impossible in real life. Like, for example, I'm just going to give a random matchup here for you. One of the matchups is Takuya Nomura versus Masaki Mochizuki. how good would that match be? You know, and it gives you all kinds of... And then there's some matchups that are kind of crazy and things you wouldn't expect. How about this one? Kenta versus Hartley Jackson in a matchup on there. Yoshihashi versus Shuji Ishikawa is a matchup. Kenno versus Toru Yano. It's like you get crazy matchups that make no sense in some ways, but also are very fun. You know, you get a lot of different things going on there, so it's going to be a lot of fun. Everybody checked out for that at the end of the month. In a couple of weeks, I'll have the 16 seed matchups on the Twitter, and I'll also be recording some shows with some people for each one. Same as last year, bracketology, going through the entire bracket, and I'll predict the whole thing. Maybe I just swerved everyone. I lied, and on the bracketology, I'm going to predict that Kai will win the heavyweight bracket. That's my early swerve for everybody.
Maybe not. We'll see in March Madness, when March Madness comes around. So check out our Twitter for March Madness. Except for that, I'm going to end the show right now. We've been going on long.
Yes.
But it's been great, as always, Dylan. I want to thank you very much, Dylan, for doing the show once again here today. It's always a pleasure. So I hope all the listeners enjoyed the show as well. And you're hearing it right now. My voice is kind of going down. So,
I'm struggling.
So I want to thank you all very much for listening to the Eastern Lariat. Once again, goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLWRadio.com network.